allow us to do this before the end of this year.
Madam Chair, with your permission, can we dish out these documents that I spoke to you about?
I did say if you remove incriminating...
We read it.
Give them to the secretary and circulate on your behalf. Thank you. Particular approach to the meeting. Firstly, that the researcher of our committee gives a bit of background for 4 to 5 minutes, if he can save a few minutes to this thing, because this matter, Parliament has been dealing with it for almost 7-10 years now. It comes from the other term and the other term of Parliament. And I think that we owe it to the pensioners of Transnet to complete this issue. So I will ask the researcher to give it background so that we are all on the same page. And I will then ask Mr. Van Dijk. I was going to ask Mr. Van Dijk and Mr. Korenhoff to then put forward the nature of the problems that the pensioners are experiencing as a result of the difficulty of this matter before us. Why Mr. Van Dijk and Mr. Korenhoff is because we had earlier on appointed the researcher and the senior researcher of Parliament to research this matter for us and bring together all the previous documents, which they did. They presented to us. And then we asked Mr. Korenhoff and Mr. Van Dijk to do a brief of study on behalf of the committee that they brought to the committee that we adopted as record of committee. So for that reason, he will then explain the nature and of problems faced by Transnet pensioners. And then we will ask Transnet to present. Transnet will be ready to present. We will take a presentation in that order. Then we will ask the other parties to present after Transnet. Then we will engage as the committee. However, after Mr. Van Dijk, when members want to make an addition, before we take Transnet's presentation, let us do so. We have until 1, but we can save time if we want to. But members, I really want to emphasize that Parliament has been dealing with this matter just for too long. And it is my desire and the desire of this committee that this matter sees finality, because there are people suffering out there.
Madam Chair, can I just introduce our delegation from the pensioners?
Please sit down, sir. Before we do anything else, that's where we start. Normally the chairperson does the opening remarks, and then we do the introduction. Members will also introduce themselves to you. Sorry for creating an impression that there will not be introductions. We will ask members first. I will introduce myself, and then members will introduce themselves, because we are your hosts. You should know who your hosts are. And then we will ask everybody, starting from that corner, to introduce themselves coming this way. I am Faithy Mento, the chairperson of the committee. I will ask members to introduce themselves. Then our staff will introduce themselves. Then we will go to our guests, all of them. Thank you. Mr. Van Dijk.
Thank you, Chairperson. Moni Van Dijk, a member of the Committee for Public Enterprises. Now, my name is Peter Van Halen. I'm also a member of this committee.
I'm Gloria Borman, member of the committee.
My name is Aubrey Mugwena, member of the Patrol Committee.
Jake Dikuawo, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Mlindi Nana, member of the committee.
Good morning. Welcome. My name is Mario Oriani. I'm Rossini, member of the committee.
Morning. Melashin Magoga from the DPE.
Adam Sidat from the DPE.
Phyllis DeFito from Transnet.
Good morning, I'm Piet Moritz, Principal Officer for the Fund.
I'm not saying Transnet.
Hey,
Brendan Walsh, Transnet.
Vuyo Kasha, from Group Executive, also the Group Chief Executive of Transnet Limited.
John Alton, Club 60 representative, pensioners countrywide.
I'm Chris Kutsia. I'm convener of the pensioners. I'm also a member of SHELP.
John Benwell, I'm president of SOB.
Ek is Johan Retief, Silver Springbok Vereniging, meestal opgemaak deur afgetredenes van Suid-Afrikaanse Lugdiens. Dankie.
Okay, let me just check. If everybody that is our guest here are related to Transnet benefit, the pension benefit fund, everyone, including Lugdiens, is it because of the history of the fact that Saint Africa's Lugdiens was deel van Spoornet? Okay. Ek verstaan nou. Ja, meneer, wil jy iets vraag?
Dat ons net die trustees op voorstel van die pensioen.
Asseblief, antwoord meneer.
Meneer Leon Lou is trustee by ons van die werkgewer Transnet. Meneer John Probler is die pensionaris trustee. En dan het ons twee aktuarisse saamgebring, Anton Nel en Gert Potgieter van Alexander Pols.
Waar is de vrouw mensen? Ons het nog een lang pad om te lopen. Okay, thank you very much. The other thing that I need to say is that there will be an attendance register that will be circulated. There will be a separate attendance register for members, and there will be a separate attendance register for all the guests, Transnet, GPE, everybody. So just make sure that you sign off on the right register. Thank you very much. Mr. Boscati, over to you. Before I take you, I have not checked with the members whether the proposed approach is the right approach. Members, what's your take on the approach that I'm proposing?
No, it's fine. Perfect, Chairperson.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll give an overview of the issues that are related to the pension fund as raised by the pensioners themselves, and also the responses that Transnet so far has given to the
Chair. Before Mr. Boscati stands, can I check, is it parliamentary for members to wear sandals in committee meetings?
To where?
To wear sandals in committee. In fact, it's two different shoes altogether. So, can I check if it's parliamentary?
Imini yako yeza, bu. Imini yako yeza. Your day is coming. Please proceed.
Okay, thanks. As I was saying, that I will give an overview of the issues that have been raised on the issue at hand between the concerns that have been raised by the pensioners and also the response by Transnet so far. Prior to 1990, Transnet had two pension funds. One was for black employees and the other one was for white employees. But in 1990, these two pension funds were then merged. But before they were merged, apparently there was a deficit of 17.1 billion. There was a deficit of 17.1 billion. It looks like that even then the pensioners had concerns with regard to the deficit. But then, during the merger, Transnet proposed that they proposed three ways in which it will settle the deficit. One of those ways was that Transnet will pay $10.3 billion to the fund on the 1st of April in 1990. That the second proposal was that Transnet promised to increase its contribution to the fund from 10% to 12.5% and further to 15.5% in the 1993-94 financial year. And then the rest of the deficit then will be settled over 10 years. From the side of the pensioners, these commitments were not met, which means the deficit remained. Following that, Transnet went on in 2000 to amend the Pension Fund Act, splitting the pension fund into three parts. One was...
Was it Transnet or Parliament that amended the act?
Obviously, I think it would be Parliament.
Yeah, it would be Parliament.
Thank you, Chairperson. And then it was split into three parts. The first was for members who didn't want to become members of a defined benefit fund. The second one was for workers who retired after the 1st of April in 2000. And the third one was for all members who retired prior to the 1st of November 2000. But on the amendment, it was stipulated that the annual increase for the pension fund will be 2%. And this apparently is one of the issues that the pensioners are worried about and are proposing for an increase. Following that, one of the reasons, in fact, that this 2% is a problem to pensioners is that it's not inflation adjusted, and most of the pensioners are getting old, and the money remains as it is, and it also implies that the deficit was not fully settled, and I believe that the pensioners, because of that, believe that that is the reason why that 2% remains as it is. With the 2% increase, the pensioners are sought audience with Transnet trying to deal with the matter of the statutory 2% increase. There has been a lot of correspondence between Transnet and the pensioners. I'll try to summarize some of the correspondence. In May 2003, the chairperson of the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund of the Board of Trustees, Mr. Philip Thompson, wrote to the pensioners in response to their demand for a percentage increase in their pension. If I may quote, he said, "The trustees will wish to inform you that your annual 2% increase will continue to be paid as per rules of the fund. However, due to a drastic drop in equity market, the fund will not grant any increases above the annual 2% in July this year." That was in 2003. The trustees do not foresee this situation improving in the foreseeable future, unquote. This did not change the situation from the pensioner's side, but they continued to address the matter with Transnet. I'll go just to cite some of, I won't quote any other statements because a number of people from the Transnet side did make response to the Transnet, implying that this is not going to increase. Also, the issues that was raised were the shares, the MTN shares, which were related to the pension fund. Despite the shares being sold or changed, but this did not have any bearing on the pensioners. If I may quote at least one last time, Mr. Chris Wells, when this question was posed about the MTN shares, Mr. Chris Wells, the Chief Financial Officer of Transnet, made clear that the rules of the fund are not made clear that these the entitlements that proceeded from the MTN shares were determined by the rules of the fund and not by the funding position of the fund. In his opinion, pensioners have received more than what was due to them in terms of the rules of the fund. In explaining this, Mr. Chris Wells went on to say that the dividends of the MTN transaction accrued to Transnet, and that Transnet acknowledges the existence of a deficit and its responsibility to manage that situation to provide an appropriate solution. But it's not automatic that the money that accrued from the selling of the shares will go to the pension fund and be of benefit to the pensioners. If I may continue.
You are left with 2 minutes.
Okay, Chair, I'll try to summarize. That also the sale of the waterfront, which was expected at least to also be of benefit to the pension fund, to the pensioners in a way, that also did not have any direct impact to the 2% increase or to the money that they receive. This was also an issue for the pensioners. And then there have been a number of other efforts that the pensioners made. I've listed from 1989 when the pensioners tried to raise the matter with the various different ministers of public enterprises, even the CEOs from the Transnet side, but the matter remains unresolved. As it stands, the 2% increases remain as it is, but Transnet, I remember in 2007 when they came before Parliament, they say they did not intend to give pensioners money that does not relate to how much they were earning when they were in active employment. If I remember correctly, it was one of the reasons, but I believe also that they will explain the matter better today before the committee. That is all, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry for putting you on the spot because I didn't tell you previously that you would present this morning. I told you a minute before you presented. I was just testing whether Parliament is paying its money for the right cause. So you thank you very much. You did very well. Thanks. Mr. Van Dijk, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes. There were many questions in Parliament for written reply and oral reply by the different ministers for this past 2 decades from all political parties in Parliament. And I think that was one of the reasons why this committee put this issue on its annual strategic plan last year when we determined the plan for this term in advance. And at that stage, it came clear to us, one of the reasons why it was put onto the strategic plan is that in a written reply by the former minister, it was said in Parliament that the average salary of these people,
is that Mr. Alec Owen,
that the average salary in 2008 was 2,833 rand per month. That was the pension, the average pension of these pensioners. And that the lowest pension paid out in 2008 was as little as 219 rand per month. And then it also came to our knowledge that these pensioners only receive a 213 rand medical contribution per month from Transnet. That was actually their remuneration package. And we realized that, as you said correctly, Chairperson, in the beginning, it came a long way that we need to address this for once and for all, because the main problem is that there is legislation. There's a piece of legislation that determines this 2% annual growth in pensions. It is Rule 24, adds a schedule to the Transnet Pension Fund Act. And that Rule 24, as a schedule to the Transnet Pension Fund Act, it determines that the pension will increase only 2% annually. And that came now since the 90s. And we are now in 2010 with a huge inflation rate over this past decade. And these people who worked for Transnet, some of them out of 40 years, of all different racial groups, are actually now in the category of the poorest of the poor. Chairperson, then we also realized that there were many promises made in the past. But actually, this is not to put blame on anyone. It is a problem that this Parliament and this committee inherit. Since 1990, when the former SA Transport Services became Transnet, then, as Mr. Boskati correctly said, there was a shortfall of 17 billion rand. And it was, apparently it was promised by the then government that after 94 and just before 1994, before the new dispensation, that the government of national unity will address this problem, but it never happened. So this problem came a long way, and we are sitting now with legislation, and the only way to change that Rule 24 of the Transnet Pension Fund Act is either that the Board of Trustees can amend it because they got the power according to legislation, but of course with the approval of Transnet and the Minister of Public Enterprises and the Minister of Finance, or either that it has to be amended by Parliament. Parliament can amend legislation, and it, the Transnet Pension Fund Act was actually amended a couple of times over this past 2 decades concerning other matters. Chairperson, now, before this committee appointed me and, or before you appointed me and Dr. Kornhoff, my colleague, as a small little task team, we realized the importance of this as it came to our knowledge that almost 40% of these pensioners at present receive less than the state social pension fund. And we also realized that according to legislation, the Transnet Pension Fund Act, that Transnet guarantees the financial obligations of the fund, and then also that the South African government, so the state, guarantees on its term Transnet obligations. So it is a problem, it is an issue for this committee to deal with. And then me and Dr. Kornhoff made a presentation to the committee that we ask, as I read it from the document, it is proposed that the delegations, different delegations that can put the matter to this committee, appear before the portfolio committee, and this proposal from the task team was accepted on the 20th of April this year, and this led to the meeting that we had here today. So, Chairperson, this is from the task team, from me and Dr. Kornhoff. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will just check if members want to say anything, but I want to explain the Treasury was one of the people we had identified to participate here, but they had asked that they should not, they should just observe for now. They should not participate. So we have a representative of Treasury today, which I want to acknowledge, but they will not be participating. But this matter also has got a bearing on Treasury. So I don't know at what time are they going to participate, but I have granted them the right to observe in today's meeting, but that will not be a right that is given forever. There is a time when Treasury will have to get involved. And I've taken the liberty upon myself, committee members, to allow Treasury today to observe. But at a later stage, they will have to participate actively in the process, as the law requires. Thank you. Members, anything from you before? Mr. Raop.
Chairperson, this is very outrageous. Outrageously low and very inhumane. And 2% really to be pegged to the pension increase pegged that price. I mean, we'll all agree. It's grossly inhumane. But perhaps the one or two questions will have to be asked. I appreciate the background that has been given so far. It illuminates the picture. doesn't help, of course, to dig into the past, because we are now seized with this matter here, and the democratic government, etc., and then all these people are the voters of the country. So many people have bungled. One of them, of course, is Dr. Mulman, who is the last CEO. I mean, for him to sell the waterfront for $250 million, that was just a joke, really. It was a giveaway, because that's where the money could have come. And that would have really reduced that deficit of 17 points.
I don't know if I should pull out of whatever, it's okay.
No, but that's history, Chairperson. Yeah. That's history, because what I'm saying so is because modestly, I'm one of the people who served on this committee in 1994, 1995. So we know that. And so I thought about that must reflect. having said so, Chairperson, just what is the norm currently now as far as pension is concerned? In other words, you know, these pensioners of Transnet must not be discriminated against. When you compare them with all other pensioners across the parastatals, what is the norm in respect of increase? Is it linked to the CPI? What is it? So that we do not, as a patrol committee, in trying to correct something we actually created anomaly, give them 4%, 6%, whatever, when other people are getting X percent. You understand? So perhaps if we just get guidance there. So whatever recommendation we make should not be outrageous. We mustn't try come up with a ridiculous suggestion when in fact we are trying to remedy the situation. The other question, Chairperson, quickly subsumed to this one would be, they getting this average 200-300 per month, which I've already said is ridiculous.
That's the lowest.
The lowest, yes.
The highest is getting
2,000. Yes, 2.8.
Yeah.
Now, do they also access the social pension? I just want to find out, because all pensioners are entitled to this government, this social pension. Do they get two pensions in short? Just want to strike a balance there. Now, that will probably inform us when we come to a determination. Yeah.
Let me just deal with two things. We note your question. But the first question, I think we must give it to DPE and to Treasury to go and check for us how the pensioners of Transnet compare with the other pensioners. Of course, their rules will be different, but maybe just to check what is the norm. Is it are they outrageously low, or is there a general problem, and how do they compare with others? I think that is the responsibility of DPE and Treasury. Much as Treasury is not participating properly, and I want to put a time frame to this to them to say that if you can give us an answer in I don't know, I will come back to the time frame. It must be a reasonable time frame. The second question, last year Parliament, just before national general elections, Parliament passed a law that undo the prohibition of pensioners to source social pension. Remember, it was illegal for an ex-principal, an ex-nurse, an ex-public servant to double dip. If you had, or even if you are from the private sector, if you had a pension, it was illegal for you to dip from the social pension as well. But before general election, that was lifted. But it is also apparent that many people in the country are not aware of that. So they should actually, without hindrance, dip into the social pension, because Parliament lifted that prohibition just before national elections. If we can, for the next 10 minutes, ask whatever or clarity questions and whatever, and then give a chance to the presenters. I have noted two hands. Are there any other hands? Yes. I'll take Mr. Ambrosini and yourself, sir, and then we will take the presentations. Mr. Ambrosini?
No, just an introductory note, Madam Chairman, just to praise you for this initiative. I think that on this occasion, Parliament is really giving demonstration of its intention of being a proactive Parliament, an activist Parliament. And I think that the worth of that statement will really lie not in this process, but what we can tell these people when they leave, how tangible a guarantee will be that they leave from here with not yet another promise, but with some tangible form of relief. And I really praise you, Madam Chairman, for having taken this initiative and for having made the commitment you made at the beginning of this meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Ambrosini. Mr. Dikobo?
Thank you, ma'am. Maybe the question will be answered when the presentation is made, but let me just make it now, ask it now. Because I have a suspicion. From my listening, it looks like the trustees are failing the pensioners. And coming from an environment of GEPF, I know that the board there is composed of worker representatives and employer representatives. Is my suspicion correct to say that we are talking about a trust or a board that does not have worker representatives? Because, 2% all these years, not on?
I think we can dispose of this question immediately, whether workers are represented in the Board of Trustees, and then a Transnet should answer that and then be, move on to present.
Maybe there's a quick answer to that.
Chair, you have pensioner representatives as well as company representatives. I say work, pensioner rather than worker, because this fund is a closed fund. No longer has active employees. These are pensioners, but there is a pensioner representative on the Board of Trustees as well as company representatives.
Well, I don't want us to belabor this, but I want us to plot it as a matter of interest going forward, not probably in this meeting, but maybe in another meeting. We note your response and we welcome it. If we want to engage on this issue, I would suggest that we should, if we don't want to lose it, we should engage it in a next meeting. The composition of the Board of Trustees, if we want to. Of. You have a follow-up, sir?
No. I take what you are saying, Chairperson, but maybe also the question is, what are the numbers? I mean, we may actually have nine employer rep and one pensioner. What is the balance there?
What's the ratio?
Two pensioner members, four for management.
So the board is six person?
Six people and there's
two
pensioners and four management.
Okay, which is 33.3 and 66%. No, it's okay. Look, we note this and it could be an issue for recommendations, further discussions in another meeting. Thank you, Mr. Budikobo, for bringing that forward. I think at this stage you must take Transnet and allow them to make their presentation. You have heard the presentation, you have heard the questions and the concerns, and if in addition to your presentation you can attempt to slot in, I know that you will have to think on your feet to do that. But if not, then you can send a memo, a written memo following this discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just introduce the presentation, and then it would be made. You had asked about where the women are. The women will be making the presentation, my colleague Helen Wang. I think one thing we can't ignore that this is a vexing, complex, and troubling issue for all of us. We all are aware that it has a historical legacy dating back to the 17.2 billion rand inherited from the pre-democratic dispensation. So this matter, as the research of Parliament has reflected, goes back a number of years. The number of issues that you've raised, and I think one of the points, Chairperson, you emphasized was the importance of the presence of both DPE and the National Treasury in this. Because also there is an open legal issue relating to government's original guarantee of the pension fund and the extent of that guarantee and whether or not it continues to be applicable. I said this matter is a troublesome issue because the number of people here perhaps might not be represented here, known as what we sometimes refer to as previously disadvantaged widows. In another word, we refer to as the black widows of these funds, because for the period 16 December 1974, black employees of Transnet who retired during the period 16 December 1974 to 1 April 1986, were not entitled to, did not have a spouse's pension. And so when we deal with this, we also factor in that there's been a whole host of other complexities that we have inherited. We have taken various steps, as will be shown in the presentation, to find mechanisms to best manage the circumstances we find ourselves. We've not created the circumstances. These are circumstances that we have inherited. We are well aware that nobody wants the 2% statutory limit. In fact, we ourselves would have been far more happier with a position where the fund could afford, and this emphasis here, where the fund could afford to pay more. Because as we equally aware, and I think honourable members of parliament have emphasised the issue of the fiduciary duties of the trustees of this fund, and that includes that they've got to ensure the sustainability of those funds. So they can't do more than what the funds can afford, and that's also an objective factor that they've got to deal with. They can't commit. Even if they wanted to give 10%, if 10% cannot be afforded, they'll be breaching their fiduciary duties. And I think the news are recently have flooded with steps being taken against directors and other office bearers who breach their fiduciary duties. So we will look, we'll present here and set out what we've considered appropriate to do, what we've done in the circumstances. And we hope that will address all of the questions that members of Parliament have raised.
Just before I take the presenter, thank you, Vuyo. Mr. Mokwena, can I help you?
Yes, you say the fund cannot pay out more than what it has. What is the strength of the, what's the monetary strength of the fund?
Let's say we hope that the presentation will show us the strength of the fund, but also the number of survivors, because people will be attrition, and we don't even know what happens to the beneficiaries when the members exit due to death, etc., etc. So you'll have to paint a holistic picture to us that shows us the strength versus how many people remain. And in terms of how the fund has been crafted, if they perish, are they their beneficiaries entitled to them? Because when you close the fund, you close it for the purpose of you want it to wear off eventually. So talk to those kind of things and please help us. You may proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, committee members. A number of issues have been raised in the discussion, so the presentation, to the extent that those issues have been raised and addressed already, I'm going to move through the presentation fairly rapidly there to try and make sure that there's sufficient time on the areas where the questions have come from. So, in addition, we had put down in the first slide the background to the TPF. As previously mentioned, it was established in 1990. I think of importance is at the date that the TSDBF was created on the 1st of November, the number of pensioners that were transferred to the TSDBF, the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund, were 101,000 odd pensioners with a related pension liability of 17.8 billion at that date. The assets that were transferred at that time was 56.9% of the assets from the single fund, which was then split into the three funds as discussed, and that was assets with a value of 19.9 billion. The challenge, though, with the way that the assets were set up is that they were very susceptible to changes in market movements, and there was also a lot of eggs in one basket, if one can put it that way. So there was a lot of risk associated with the assets. That is very evident from the fact that since inception of the TSDBF in November 2000, the deficit moved substantially for every year thereafter, up until 2005. And you'll see later in the presentation, when I get to the financial side, you'll see that the deficit is 1.5 billion rand. The TSDBF, however, from 2006, moved into a surplus, and again, that information is there, and the TSDBF is currently in a surplus of 2.7 billion rand, I think, which is subject still to board approval, which means that there has been a movement in the financial soundness of the fund of in excess of 8 billion rand over the last 10 years. There are further details in the presentation. One of the key things to remember in looking at our pensioners, though, is that a pensioner with a short service or a very low pensionable salary to start with, increases will not, whether they CPI-linked increases or the guaranteed 2%, if you start off with very short service and a very low pension, you will continue to have a very low pension. We mentioned the state old age pension or the state grant. Approximately 34,000 of the PSDBS pensioners potentially qualify to receive the state grant, and there will be further discussion on this later because that eligibility has had an impact on various decisions that have been made around what benefits to provide to pensioners up until this time. As was mentioned by Mr. Koshler, there were certain challenges, which we've all mentioned, that were inherent.
But both CONSEC and the PSDBS, the fund. I'm not sure, can everybody hear me? It seems like maybe the power on the... Ms. Sun, can you guys talk to the technician? In the meantime, we'll have to speak as loud as we can whilst we call in for technical help. Thank you. Thank you. Is this, can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
So, Transnationalists and the PSDBS, and in particular the trustees, have worked very hard together based on the position of the PSDBS as we received it in 2000 to rebalance the portfolio to make it more sustainable, to improve the financial position of the PSDBS, and as mentioned, I'll show later in the presentation how that's been achieved and what it's led to, as well as to improve the returns to beneficiaries of the PSDBS. A couple of the items that were mentioned, I know in various submissions made to Parliament, as well as the response from the research unit, the peer-driven bonds during the early 1990s, which is when Transnet was corporatized, and at which stage the Transnet pension fund was established, with the 17 billion rand deficit. Transnet then decided, although there was not necessarily an obligation to place actual funds into the PSDBS, Transnet, acting as guarantor with government of the funds, nonetheless made a decision to inject the T11 bonds into what was then the PPS in excess of 10 billion rand. And those bonds were injected at no cost to the funds. When the funds in 2000 were then split into three funds, 4.8 billion rand of those bonds, still at no cost, were handed over to the PSDBS. Unfortunately, however, those bonds were issued at the highest interest rate cycle in the market at the time, and were on objective review. It was identified that those bonds were not sustainable, and that the cash flows were having a view of those bonds were having a very negative impact on the guarantor. And therefore, in early 2001, the bonds were cancelled by the trustees of the PSDBS. In return, however, and again at no value, at no cost, Transnet gave over the beneficial interest in the capital of 75 million NTN shares held in a trust to the PSDBS. So the T11 bonds were cancelled, but the capital interest in the 75 million NTN shares were passed over to the PSDBS. As mentioned previously, but I know there was a question, I'd just like to reiterate, the beneficiary's benefit at that time was a 2% statutory guaranteed increase. It was a guaranteed increase, which meant that it wasn't subject to the financial position of the fund. In other words, the pensioners at all times got the 2% increase, at least, as we've heard historically, there were sometimes more, regardless of the deficit position that the fund found itself in, which was the 2% as a given. Subsequent to that transaction, and I'll just refer to at the bottom of the slide, because the capital in interest in the 75 million NTN shares, that investment subsequently performed very well. And in January 2006, when the NTN shares were disposed of, 5 billion rand in cash flowed into the PSDBS. And again, I'll reiterate this point later, when you can see the financial movements of the fund, you can quite clearly see when those funds are disposed of. Mention was also made of the VMA water fund. As we mentioned at the start of the presentation, one of the challenges being faced by the PSDBS was a significant in investment or disproportionate investment in a single asset that was subject very much in terms of its value to fluctuations or changes in the market. And a decision was therefore taken to dispose of this single property investment being the VMA water fund. Transnet, together with the trustees of the fund, because all three of the funds that were created on 1 November 2000, so the Transnet second defined benefit, which we're discussing today, that in addition to that, the TRS and the CPS worked together to reduce the fund exposure to the single asset, And in fact, the investment was sold at the height of the property market for maximum value. And many, many experts have said that it was a very good transaction for all of the stakeholders, all three of the funds. This resulted, the proceeds were split without deductions according to the actual ownership by the respective funds, and as the PSDBF held 44% interest in the V&A Water Fund, more than 2 billion rand in cash flowed into the PSDBF. And again, when we look at the financial position of the fund, we can see the impact on that transaction on the fund. In addition to those two particular items, we mentioned this is a closed fund. It's a closed fund and it's a defined benefit fund. And the asset allocation within the fund at the time that the three funds were created was not an appropriate asset allocation mix when we know what our obligations are. You want to try and have an asset mix that provides you some certainty around having the cash flows to meet those pension obligations. And again, the trustees of the TSDDS and Transnet have worked very closely together to try and move the asset allocation of the fund to a more appropriate asset mix. In addition, because the fund is closed and therefore has no contributions from its members, because they're all members of pensioners, it's a very good idea to try and immunize, or to the extent possible, ensure that your returns are going to be sufficient going into the future to meet the obligation. And in 2007, the TSDBS implemented the cash flow matching transaction, which at the time that it was implemented resulted in approximately 85% of the fund's assets being immunized, meaning that you knew that the returns from those investments would give you the cash flow to meet your pension obligation. And this immunization was done up until 2021 to ensure that the pension cash flows up until that time will be met from the asset allocation that you've got in the fund.
Immunized is
where you get a guaranteed return on the asset, so it's not subject to ensure your cash flow. So you know that the cash flow you're going to receive is going to meet your pension obligations as they arise. It's not subject to fluctuation.
But he's asking, is it a similar thing to insulating the funds?
The reason why we use the word immunize is because you've got an obligation as a result of the fund being a 2% statutory increase. So as a result of entering into this cash flow matching, you actually immunize that obligation. In other words, you're saying that there is certainty if you enter into the cash flow matching transaction, that the obligation is immunized and you are certain that you're going to get the return from this investment to actually meet that obligation.
Is that a generally acceptable concept in legal and actual return? Okay. Because of the success of that transaction, in fact, earlier this year, further cash was also immunized to try and give greater certainty around the TUCD.
The
success of the immunization transaction in 2007.
Okay, I thought you were referring to the MTN and the VNA water fund. I was going to say that is highly disputable. And highly. So if you are referring to the immunization, that's okay. But your assertion about the success in the waterfront sale and the MTN share sale, that's an issue this committee wants to contest.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I am talking about the immunization at this stage. Thank you. As a result of that transaction, the TUCBF entered into a further immunization transaction this year to try and provide greater certainty around the fund's ability to continue with its bonus payments, which have been in place since 2007. As mentioned by Mr. Kaushler, the previously disadvantaged widows in respect of black pensioners who retired up until April 1986 were not entitled to a spouse's pension from the Transnet funds. So in 2007, Transnet procured that the Transnet Pension Fund Act was amended to provide for the transfer of those previously disadvantaged widows into the TSDBS in order to give them a benefit from the fund. Those rule amendments went through the appropriate governance processes and were approved, and when the previously disadvantaged widows were transferred, Transnet made a contribution to the fund
to cover not only the 100% obligation, but in fact the amount that was paid in was 112% of the obligation, which would be the future pension obligation of those previously disadvantaged widows to match the degree of funding in the fund at the time, so that there was no prejudice to existing members, but that the previously disadvantaged widows moving in would receive the same future benefits as what the existing members were receiving. In addition to that, Transnet made certain ex gratia payments to the beneficiaries of the TSDVF over the past 4 years.
Can I just implore members, if there is a question of clarity, let's just note it, and then we'll ask it at the end of the presentation.
Thank you.
I don't know why the media is getting a price next to the chapter.
Well, the plenty of seats.
Okay. Much as your mother. It's okay.
I'm very tender. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you. In determining the ex gratia bonus payments, Transnet has always paid particular attention to the previously disadvantaged pensioners, but also those pensioners with long service, pensioners over the age of 65, and obviously those pensioners who have very low pensions have always taken priority. And in 2007, 2008, and 2010, Transnet paid bonuses or made ex gratia payments to certain of the members of the fund. In 2007, Honourable Chair, and in 2008, there were three tiers of payments made. So there were different qualifying criteria, and with the focus being on ensuring that those people most disadvantaged and receiving the lowest pensions get as much money as possible from Transnet. So these weren't payments from the fund. It was payments from the company who has no obligation to make payments to the pensioners. So the payment profile can be determined based on really trying to benefit those who are battling the most. And in 2010, pensioners earning in particular less than 815 rand per month, which were mainly the previously disadvantaged pensioners and would definitely have covered the previously disadvantaged widows that were transferred into the fund, received amounts of up to approximately 6,800 rand of bonuses. So the sort of focus in 2010 was in particular on those previously disadvantaged and those earning the very, very low pensions. In addition, as a result of the strengthening performance of the fund, and in order not to negatively impact the financial soundness of the fund in terms of actuarial evaluation methodologies, Transnet and the TSDVF proposed the rule providing for ad hoc bonuses in this instance to be paid by the TSDVF, and this rule amendment went through the governance processes, was approved by the Minister of Public Enterprises together with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. And when those rule amendments were approved, certain ad hoc bonuses from June 2007 were then paid to the TSDVF pensioners. The reason that the bonuses were chosen is that the bonuses are not taken into account, because they are ad hoc bonuses and they're not guaranteed. The bonuses are not taken into account in the means test in calculating an older person's entitlement to a state grant. And what that means is that our pensioners, and there's approximately 34,000 of them, now we'll get to the numbers later, but that's out of 74,000 members currently. Approximately 34,000 of them are eligible for the state old age pension. What they receive is, with receiving a pension from the TSDVF, they receive a top-up to bring them to the minimum level for the state old-age pension. In calculating that top-up for themselves, the bonuses are not taken into account because they're not guaranteed, which means they receive the top-up, and regardless of the bonus, that additional amount gets paid. It doesn't take cognizance of the bonus, which means that those persons who are eligible for the state old age pension receive at least the state old age pension amount plus the bonuses on top of it. That does come into account when one starts looking at different methods of increased policies. As a result of those rule amendments and as a result of the improvement in the financial position of the TSDVF, the TSDVF paid bonuses of 1.5% of all pensioners' annual pension benefits in November 2007, 3% in July 2008, 5.5% in November 2008, 7% in November 2009, and most recently 8.33% in February 2010. And when we talk about to the pensioners here, it's both your principal pensioners as well as spouses of pensioners or children of pensioners where the pensioners have died. At the end of the day, the bonuses that have been paid, between the TSDBS bonuses and the Transnet bonuses that have been paid since 2007, the pensioners of the TSDBS have received benefits, improvements of at least 70% of inflation since 2007, primarily then since the immunization of the fund and the other activities were taken. The weighted average increase in pensions over 2008, 9 and 10 has been approximately 13.4%. As we've mentioned previously, the funding position of the TSDBS is a historical legacy dating back to the 17.2 billion rand deficit. The question was raised around the original guarantee of the fund. It is a very complex legal question and not easily answered. Any rule amendment that the that would be recommended by Transnet would not be recommended if it resulted in prejudice to the financial soundness or stability of the TSDBS. But in the absence of any other funding commitment, Transnet and the trustees have managed the TSDBS within the constraints of the level of funding, with appropriate asset management rule amendments and, in addition, direct payments by Transnet. I'm hoping everybody can see these numbers. This sets out the funding position of the fund over the last 10 years. The first column, which is 2000 with the star, is basically that was the funding position of the fund at inception of the fund on 1 November 2000 when the TPF was divided into three funds. You can see that the funding percentage at the date of inception was 111.4%, but by the first reporting period of 31 March 2001, the fund was 81.9% funded. The assets were actuarially valued at 16.5 billion rand, but the liabilities, the pensioner obligations, were valued at 20.1 billion rand. And you can see from 2001 through to 2005, the increase in the deficit by virtue of the funding level. The funding level there reduces as the liabilities exceed the assets. In 2000, just to remind members that in 2006 was when the, and you can see the asset value moving from 16.4 to 19.2, in 2006 is when the MTN shares were disposed of, and in 2007 is when the V&A waterfront was disposed of, and in addition in 2007 is when the immunization policy was implemented. And one can see from 2007 through to 2010, and I again must just reiterate that the 2010 actuarial valuation report is available from the actuaries, and we've used the numbers here, but hasn't yet been approved by the Board of Trustees of the TSDBF, that the funding level has increased and has remained above 100% since 2007. The last row in that funding position slide shows the change in the number of members of the fund. So at inception, the 101,635 members were transferred, and at 31 March 2010, we have 75,114 members of the pension fund. The proposal before the committee is for an inflation-related annual increase. And what we've done is set out in the table the impact of the increase on the TSDBF in terms of the actuarial valuation that would result were the proposal to be implemented. And the impact has been shown on the using the actuarial valuation at 31 March 2009, as this was the latest approved by the Board of Trustees. And we've basically shown what the funding level would be at the moment, the 2% fixed guaranteed increase. The funding level would be reflected at 109.5% if 50% of inflation were targeted. And again, the reason I say targeted is because an inflation-linked increase would have to be subject to the affordability of the funds. But if one were to target a 50% of inflation based on the various assumptions that the actuaries make in preparing the report, they would reflect the fund as being 100% funded, i.e. the assets and the liabilities equal each other. If one had to target 75% of inflation, the fund, based on the asset value at 31 March 2009, would show a deficit of 2.5 billion rand, and if 100% of inflation were targeted, a deficit of 5.7 billion rand. What's interesting is that while a 50% inflation targeted increase is affordable based on the
based on the numbers set out. If one compares that to the bonus policy that's been in place for the last 3 years, pensioners would actually receive less cash through the 50% of inflation targeting than they do under the current 2% guaranteed with the ad hoc bonus dispensation. In addition, those pensioners that receive the state grant would receive less because, again, the state grant is based on what on the means test. So if you get a higher pension, your top-up from the state grant to bring you up to the minimum is going to reduce, and there are no bonuses on top of that. So in other words, all income received from the TSDBF would be taken into account for those pensioners, as opposed to at the moment it's just the pension and the ad hoc bonuses are not included. So the ad hoc bonus they receive on top of the minimum of SOAP. Any inflation-linked policy would reduce their cash flow.
You have 5 minutes to round
up. Thank you very much. I have just shown, to illustrate the impact of the market expectation on inflation, because in the previous example, as I pointed out, because the actuarial valuation had been approved by the Board of Trustees, who based the calculations on the 31 March 2009 report, this is just interesting that if you look at targeting 100% of inflation, but if you compare the assumptions made between 2009 and 2010, where inflation has improved in the current year, you can see that the deficit that the actuaries are now saying would be there, as opposed to the $5.7 billion when it was done on the 2009 numbers, would potentially be $3 billion on 2010. But, of course, that's based on the assumption of inflation. So next year, if the inflation assumptions are worse than they were in 2009, that could go beyond 5.7 billion rand. Effectively, the retention of the status quo, which is the 2% increase plus the ad hoc bonus dispensation, would mean that the financial eligibility of those pensioners receiving the state grant will not be negatively impacted. The financial position of the TSDBF and the actuarial surplus, as well as the bonus payments made over the last 4 years, should provide some confidence to pensioners about the continued payment of ad hoc bonuses. Pensioners will also always receive at least the 2% guaranteed statutory increase per annum because this is guaranteed and is not dependent on the financial position of the fund at the time. Inflation-linked increases could provide those pensioners pensioners with greater security. Of course, it would depend on where inflation goes. An inflation-linked pension increase would be subject to the financial affordability of the fund. And the reason I made the comment about the 2% value being guaranteed is if the TSDBF had to move into a deficit, it would be highly unlikely that increases would be given or would be recommended by the trustees or by the actuaries because of the fund being in a deficit, as opposed to historically where the guaranteed statutory minimum increase is granted regardless of the funding position of the fund. And then, of course, many of the pensioners receiving or eligible to receive the state grant would no longer receive a state grant and their cash flows would be significantly less or could potentially be significantly less under an inflation-linked increase policy. The progress made in terms of the financial position of the TSDBF and in addition to that, the payments made to the pensioners of the TSDBF has in particular over the last 5 years, from 2005 to 2010, been significant. And Transnet is now in a position, together with the trustees of the TSDBF and the board of the TSDBF, to consider amendments to the increased rules of the TSDBF. Any amendments, however, must be, one, the TSDBF has certain obligations to ensure that they maintain their fiduciary duties and do what's in the best interest of the various pensioners. And Transnet, in addition, would want to make sure that any proposed increase was in the best interest of all members of the fund, in particular those members who receive the lowest pension and those members who are eligible for SOAP. But it should be in the best interest of every pensioner in terms of increases and particularly in terms of cash flows. Any increased rule, of course, would need to go through the appropriate processes of trustee approval, Transnet approval, Minister of Public Enterprises, and the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. Thank you.
Thank you. Member, I want to check with you, just to check your mic, please.
How do we proceed? That was a very involved presentation. Before we decide the way forward, let's check with the other presenter. You presenting one presentation together.
Yes.
Approximately how many minutes do you need?
20.
20 minutes.
I'm thinking I did hear, sir. Let me check with members. What's your take in terms of approach, members? I know I said the rules are always there to be reviewed at the beginning. Yes, sir, Mr. Kubo?
I want to propose that let's hear all the voices so that we can then come and ask specifically.
Okay. Is that okay with members?
Madam Chair, if they need 20 minutes, I don't know how much staff need that, but I would suggest we give them the 20 minutes. I mean, let's hear it out, that we don't have to come back here again.
All right. No, it's okay. Thanks. We will give them 20 minutes. Then we will engage after 20 minutes. Please, as presenter from the other side, not that I'm dividing you. The next presenter, Mr. Fundy.
Chairperson, just on a point of clarity, in the introduction it was mentioned that they represent Shelp. Can they just tell us what is Shelp standing for? And also, if I got it correct from research documents, that Mr. Benwell, you are also, you must just correct me, are also a member of the Board of Trustees at present.
Yes, I am.
But you're here in your capacity as representing the pensioners, am I correct? Thank you.
That clarity question? That he has asked?
Yeah. Shelp is the Spoorweg Havens and Luchtdienst pensioners.
Okay. There are not any more clarity questions, so the presenter may proceed. 20 minutes.
Madam Chair, honourable members, thank you very much. I've been requested by the various clubs to present this matter to you due to my being a trustee of the Transnet Pension Fund prior to my retirement in 95, and more recently as a trustee of both the Transnet Second Defined Fund and the Transnet Medical Scheme.
Members, you do have the document you're talking to?
Yeah, well, we have circulated.
Mr. Ambrosi, he does not have a copy, please.
Copy,
Mr. Nana.
You are? Have you got one?
Just pass mine to some Rosina.
And you can have mine, ladies.
Okay.
There's plenty here.
Leave this one to me, sir.
I think it's my last thing there.
Okay. No, it's okay. You can have it. I'll share what this sounds. It's not a problem.
I can have something.
No, it's okay. Thank you.
Now, Madam Chair, I'm president of the African Association of Retired Persons, and we've got 100,000 members throughout the country from all walks of life, and it includes thousands of pensioners from the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund. I've come into contact with those members basically on a daily basis in my present position. Pensioners retired on pensions that they considered acceptable based on their working salaries, and the expectation was that the pension fund would maintain their pensions in line with inflation. At that time, despite the fact that the pension fund rule stipulated a 2% annual increase, increase was granted in excess of the 2% to bring pensions closer to that of inflation. At that time, there was also a large workforce that contributed to the pension fund monthly, and this provided a strong foundation on which the pension fund could operate. Since then, many changes have taken place which have resulted in the expected pensions of pensioners dwindling to a fraction of what they expected to receive, and many of them of all races are now living on a hand-to-mouth basis and relying on others to ensure their survival. In 1989, a decision was made by the then company, a semi-state organization functioning under sound business principles, that the then SA Transport Services became Transnet as it is today. The then Minister of Transport and General Manager issued a document to all employees assuring them that the changes that were taking place were to their advantage and that it would ensure a sound future for everyone. It said in the book that was issued that besides the 2% increases, pensioners would expect pension increases in excess of the statutory 2% to compensate for inflation. This is the book, Madam Chair, and attached to my presentation is the two excerpts of it. Unfortunately, this is an Afrikaans, but I've translated them into English as well, if people don't speak Afrikaans. But this is the book that was issued to every member. It also assured workers that the Transnet medical scheme would look after all their medical requirements after their retirement. In 2000, the pension fund was split into three, with all the pensioners at that time becoming members of the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund. This fund does not have an income from working member contributions as in the past, but functions completely on investment income from assets invested. At the beginning, members continued to receive the increases slightly above the 2% as stipulated in the fund, and also as indicated in the undertaking in the book. In 2002, it was, however, decided by Transnet that the fund would in future be restricted to giving increases of only 2% as stipulated in the fund rules. This is the cause of the problems that we put before you today. With the ravages of inflation and the result of increases being way below inflation, pensioners have become systematically impoverished, receiving pensions way below the pensions they were promised and expected. These pensioners, due to not being able to support themselves on their pensions being received, are having to sell their houses, are moving in with family, or relying for handouts from charities and churches. Pensioners staying in retirement homes are having to leave the retirement homes due to the high charges, and they are having to move in with family. Pensioners who thought they would have provided for their retirement years are having to look to children and family for support. We repeatedly hear that pensioners are relying on one meal a day and sometimes even less. The Board of the Trustees of the Second Defined Benefit Fund has recently undertaken a series of meetings throughout the country to address pension fund matters, and the members at these meetings have been inundated with members complaining that they are unable to live on the meager pensions they are now receiving. Whilst the average pension of pensioners is around $2,800 per month, there are many pensioners, particularly those that occupy low positions in the company and on whose pensions are based on a low salary, who receive much lower than this figure. In 2008, it was as little as 219 rand per month. Almost 40% of the pensioners received less than the state social pension of 1,080 rand. The pension fund rules also provide for a widow pension of 70% of the pension of the member at his death. This reduction of pension that is already worth a fraction of the buying power of the pensioners on retirement is hitting the widows in the fund even harder. The trustees of the Second Defined Benefit Fund are very aware of the plight of the pensioners. However, the financial vision of the fund does not allow them to consider making annual adjustments in line with inflation. Unlike other private pension funds, functioning in terms of the Pension Funds Amendment Act, which stipulates a trustee representation of 50% appointed from the members, the Second Defined Benefit Fund has its own act and only has two elected members with four Transnet appointed members. Also, even though we were elected by the members, our final appointment was by Transnet, so the elected members have little chance of doing anything that is contrary to the interests of Transnet, such as proposing a rule amendment as is envisaged today. The trustees will also be not exercising their fiduciary duties if they try to change the rules, in the knowledge that the fund could not afford the results of the change. Transnet, as guarantors of the fund, have also not offered to provide funding for any such changes. The trustees, however, in an endeavour to assist the pensioners, have over the last 3 years granted once-only annual bonus payments to each pensioner based on a decided percentage of the annual pension of the pensioner. These are, however, not guaranteed and are granted subject to the investments of the fund performing in such a way that they can be afforded. The trustees, in an endeavour to try and assist the pensioners, decided last year to split the annual bonus payment into 12 equal payments over the year to assist the pensioner each month. This decision had to be rescinded as representations, particularly from lower-paid pensioners, complained that one-twelfth of the annual bonus gave them basically no financial benefit at all, as it was based on the very low pensions. Please refer to Table 1 for the examples. And in Table 1, Madam Chair, it had been circulated. We give the example of a person that retired on 2,400 rand with the bonus payments that she's received. She now gets 2,967. Had there been pension increases in line with inflation, that same person would have had 4,826 rand. We see daily reports of increases of being afforded to workers, such as the 9% to Eskom.
Can you explain that table again?
The table is on the average pension on the in column 2,
yeah.
Is the pension increase based on a 2% increase.
Uh-huh.
The other column, the bonus columns, is the bonus that she received, and the total column is the total that she received, including the bonus. So the last column is what that pension would have escalated to had she received inflation-linked increases.
Okay.
We see daily reports of demands and increases afforded to workers such as...
Sorry, column two?
Column two
is what she's getting now.
That is what she's getting
column
now.
Column five is...
Column 5 is what she would have got if inflation
was inflation related.
That's right, Madam Chair. We see data reported of demands increases afforded to workers such as 9% to ESCOM, municipal workers 13%, public service 8%, and even in Transnet itself 11%. We also see reports of regrading exercises such as in the African National Defense Force resulting in increases of as much as 65%. We're not asking for anything like this. All we ask is that pensions be adjusted in line with inflation, so as was promised by the then Minister of Transport, and that the rules of the Transnet Pension Fund be changed accordingly, and that funding for this be provided by either Transnet or the state as the sole shareholder of Transnet for this to happen. Similar promises have also been made by Minister Alec Irwin and Trevor Manuel as Minister of Finance. In fact, the Transnet Pension Fund rules stipulate that Transnet guarantees the financial obligations of the Transnet Second Fund Benefit Pension Fund, and that the Transnet Service Succession Act provides that the state guarantees Transnet's obligations. To calculate what we have lost due to the unilateral change of to only 2% maximum is not a problem with modern technology and can easily be sustained. We saw what happened in the government service, where they went back and adjusted the pensions of their pensioners in line with inflation from the date of retirement, and where their pension increases are now coupled to 100% of inflation, and this has happened since 2006. All this was done to rectify the very problems that we are now also experiencing in our pension fund, which was also previously experienced in the government service. Surely with sufficient funding, something similar could be done for us. We are all, after all, ex-employees of what was once a government service, so our plea is that our pensions increase by 100% of inflation and are backdated the same as one was done in the government service. We fully realize, Madam Chair, that you have a very busy program. We appeal to you to give us some of your valuable time to consider this matter. There are thousands of pensioners outside whose very survival depends on you to do something for them. It is the last chance to rectify a problem causing increasing hardship amongst this group that gave their working life for an organization that has effectively turned its back on them. We cannot strike, we don't have unions, and we can't make threats. All we can do is appeal to you to do what is right and to ensure that we get what was promised to us by the minister at the time, the general manager, and various other ministers along the way. Thank you for this opportunity and your kind attention. I've also been delegated to answer any questions that you may have, and I look forward to be able to give you a satisfactory answer for anything that comes forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Members, I will repeat your hand. Before I repeat your answer, I just want to make one comment. I'll ask my questions at the end. I just want to underline that... we all know that promises that were made by a particular minister at a particular time, it's a promise that still holds. And whoever is in office has the responsibility to honor that promise, if not, to give reasonable reason why they cannot. The same will apply to this committee, that when you occupy office, you become liable for what you have inherited in that particular office. So I just want us to bear that in mind, that what the presentation was given to us here did not speak a lot to the booklet that is now being put before us, the promises from both the state in the form of the former minister, as well as what was written in their book. So we will need to go back to those issues and check. There is no doubt that the state is still liable. But we will also have to take into consideration a whole number of things. Transnet proposed some things in their last page of proposals without a timeline. I would like you to apply your mind in the meantime to the timeline that you are not giving to what you think you can do in your proposal there in the last page. Members, let me take your hands, please.
Mr. Van Dalen, Mrs. Bowman. It's all members in a row, and then I will come and then we'll take a second round. So let's start here, because everybody's hand is up.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, I want to ask the representatives from the pensioners whether...
Can you ask three questions each for the...
Okay. Is it true that the representative you mentioned that only two out of the six members of the Board of Trustees are elected from the pensioners? Is it true that they are elected only in 2008? So for many years, it was the trustees who were overruled actually by Transnet appointing all the trustee members. Then, Chairperson, I got it from your presentation that over many years, because you haven't got power to strike and to demand, but over many years you try to bring this problem to the attention of government, and that your pleas were very poorly adhered to by Transnet, that you got, were there proper communication between Transnet and the pensioners over these years, or was it a problem? Chairperson? No, that was one. That's 1A and B. Now it comes here. Yeah, you didn't rule that in the beginning, Chair. You should have told me that. Chairperson, then I want to come to the whole question of bonuses. Chairperson, in the slide at the bottom where it was set that, and I read it from the presentation by Transnet, the weighted average increase in pensions over these years has been in fact been 13.4%. Now, Chairperson, I want to state this, that this is probably the biggest lie ever been told in Parliament. And the reason why I'm saying this, Chairperson, is because they compare apples with pears here. They've got only a 2%. The facts are there's only a 2% increase in pensions. The others are, as we got it from the presentation here, are bonuses, once off, not guaranteed. So you can't add a 3.5% and a 5.5% bonus to the 2% increase in the pension, because this is once off and then it collapses. You must compare apples with apples. Fact is, they stand on 2%.
It's more like you're looking at
the Transnet presentation. At the bottom, they said 13.4% weighted average. Now, you will recall, Chairperson, that last year, the acting CEO of Transnet, Mr. Chris Welch, when the committee asked him this as well, he actually apologized to Parliament that it created the wrong impression. It's on record. And here today, they come with the same story again, to try and tell us the people got 13.4%. So it's unacceptable.
Let's note that you have exhausted your three questions. We're noting that last point also. Mr. Van, we will take a second round. Mr. Van Dalen.
Yes, Madam Chair. There is a saying in life, don't do unto others as you don't want to have done on yourself. And I think that is very appropriate here at the moment. If I contribute my whole working life into a pension, because I think the state pension is too little, then I would want to have at least more benefit than the state pension at the time when I go on pension. And if somebody tells me then, well, you have to go stand in a queue there, you've worked all your life for us, but you must go stand in that queue to get the extra benefit, why must I go claim twice? I mean, why are we putting an extra burden on the state pension, which is already exhausted to capacity?
That's your first question.
No, I'm making a statement, Madam Chair, and I'm...
With
a question in the end.
Why are we burdening the state pension?
Yes, and what I just want to add in that part when you interrupted me is that if the government is already paying that part as a state pension, I mean, why should there now all of a sudden be no money for it somewhere else? Why we should take the people out of the state pension and make it Transnet's responsibility to pay them at least that. And then... the composition of the board, Madam Chair, it's something that interests me. I was a trustee on a pension board and it gets made up by pensioners, workers, and the worker representation. and that gets worked out by a formula. And usually when you have a closed pension where everybody's on pension, you should have more people on that pension that represent the pensioners. So how long will there still be two representatives and those two lone voices in a committee of six people where the employer will always overrule those pensioners, so they have actually they're only there to observe. I mean, because they will be outvoted all the time. I think it's very unhealthy. I think they should have a 50-50 split all the time, because obviously the employer also has a risk here. So that is my observations, Madam Chair. Yeah, I would like to know the third question. No, I only have two. Do I have to have three?
No, you don't have to.
I will wait for the second round.
You have to only ask one question. Mrs. Bobby.
Chairperson, yes, I'm also relating to the... to want to understand the payment of the bonuses, this ex gratia payment, would that also be deemed a bonus? I'd just like clarity on that. The other thing I want to refer to is the final statement that we got here on the finances and these columns and what a pensioner would have got had it not been, that they were receiving bonuses. This worries me because I'm understanding from the Transnet presentation, and I think we need to be careful. We don't want to change something where people are going to end up worse off. And from the Transnet presentation, I get the impression that's the best option. Because of all the bonus situation, it's very complicated, this whole thing. But when I look at the figures presented by the pensioners' representation here, it looks like a very different story. And I think I would like to have clarity whilst we're all around the same table as to why, and it's not just a little difference, I think it's a very big difference.
Material.
So if we can have clarity perhaps as to why there is such a huge discrepancy. And I think this committee is really very concerned about today, the length of time that it has taken. And we do want to get to the bottom of it. So I think the other thing, what am I on two now? This is a closed fund, and I just picked up also, is this going to intended to finish by about 2021 or something? And then if you mentioned not only widows, but the children will benefit, I mean, where does the cutoff come? I'm not very clear on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just have something flowing from Mrs. Bowman's first question? I'm going to protect Transnet, which I seldom do, if I have your attention. You do acknowledge generally, the thrust of your presentation is generally acknowledging that there is a problem. That's what I wanted to highlight. Okay, thanks. We've noted your questions, Mr. Bowman. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Obviously, as a portfolio committee, we empathize, more than sympathize. We actually empathize with the plight of these pensioners of Transnet. As you say, that the pegging of that percentage is very grossly inhumane. Now, the point I want to raise, Chairperson, is that in trying to intervene, we must ensure that we don't actually muddy the water and actually make the situation worse. The question is that of local standby. Do we as a portfolio committee have the right? I know Dr. Van Dijk did mention Rule 24 that entitles us to the Parliament to actually alter that particular rule. But then subsumed in that is that we must be careful not to operate as a remunerations committee, because we are, even if we are, much as we are overseeing parastatals as public enterprises, the whole plethora of public enterprises across the state. We are taking care of only nine because of the high profile, and they've been put there as public enterprises. But water affairs with parastatals, you know, land affairs, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the question is, is this plight only unique to Transnet? Are there other people suffering there that we do not know of? And if we intervene as a portfolio committee, will be offering up a hornet's nest or creating a precedent which will make it very untenable? The point is that we should, without delaying the resolution, but make sure that our intervention is an appropriate one and our local standard is not going to be questionable.
That question and remarks are to the portfolio committee. Ne? They are noted. We will entertain them. Mr. Dikubo?
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just firstly a statement to say that I think we should regret the fact that the voice of the Black Widows is not heard here. And those that we euphemistically call previously disadvantaged, that their voice is not heard here. But secondly, just a statement, because I want to understand from Transnet, and I want to work on affordability. I don't think we want Transnet to do something that is not affordable, because that would not be sustainable. And I'm going to make this statement, they will tell me if I'm correct, that my understanding of a closed fund is that the numbers are declining all the time. And I know that we have referred to children, but you see, children, as soon as a person is 18 years, is no longer a child. Maybe up to 26 years with some funds if the person is still at school. But you're talking about a category of employees whose children are possibly in their 40s. So this number is declining. The number is declining, and because the number is declining, the fewer you are, the bigger the slice that you should get from the cake. I just want Transnet to address us on that one. But also, looking at I'm looking at the comparative figure. A funding level of 111.4 in 2000, and now a funding level of 116%. Now, again, affordability. What would Transnet regard as the acceptable funding level to be able to afford what? But also, I want to understand.
That's your first question.
No, that's the first one.
You're moving into your third.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. You are correct, Chairperson. I seem to hear a threat here, and excuse me, Transnet, if I'm misreading you, that if we increase, we will abolish the bonus. Let me firstly say it's not a bonus, because as soon as you call it a bonus becomes a right. It becomes an entitlement. It can't be withdrawn. But this one here is ex gratia. No, given it the pleasure of whoever, after considering whatever. So for me, it is possible if the idea is to protect the pensioners so that they can continue receiving social grants, you can increase that and still have ex gratia depending on the performance of the fund, almost like what companies would call dividends. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Mr. Mlini.
The Honourable Nana wants to be the last one for whatever reason.
I'm being bullied around.
You who love laughing.
I'm being bullied around.
You got it, Mr. Ambrosini.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First question to Transnet. I want to understand whether my understanding is correct, and I'm a simple man. I need to simplify what was a complex presentation for my mind. Effectively, you said, if I understood it correctly, we put in enough money for the system to work as it is, at 2% interest rate. And if there is more, if there is an increase, there wouldn't be enough money. Now, in terms of law, of the law that we have passed, Transnet is liable for the obligations of the trust. So, if we, of the pension fund, if we increase by amending the law the 2% minimum to 100% of CPI minimum, that would be an obligation beyond, if I understand correctly, the present financial liability of the fund, and that would become an obligation of Transnet. So if my understanding is correct, the first question is, what would be the shortfall of such an amendment? And would that amendment be borne by Transnet? If not, why not? Or would it be borne by the state in terms of Transnet trying to go back to the fiscus? And that in terms of what their demand is, that it be backdated to 2006 when it was when the public servant got the 100%. The second question is to the pensioners. And again, I need to simplify things for men with a simple mind. It sounds to me as if you guys worked there for 40 years, 30 years, whatever it was, on the expectation that part of your remuneration would be a pension. And that the government, Transnet, would somehow fund your pension. I don't think any of you start writing now numbers and determine how much the pension was. I mean, you knew that there was a pension. Then, towards the end of your employment, or after your employment, this parliament, and it was before 1994, but we all refer to this as this parliament, passed what is an absurd law, saying no more than 2%. And that was after you rendered your services. Concomitantly, your colleagues in different branches of government were not privatized, now have 100% of CPI, and they started having 60%, 75% effectively since the democratic government came on. Now, it sounds to me as an absurd and unconstitutional treatment of two situations which are equal and are legislatively treated differently. Now, this committee is sensitive to matters of this nature. Perhaps it's a question to ask. I'm trying to find a statement, Madam Chairman. But how did we get to this? I mean, it's 14 years, 16 years into the democratic dispensation. I would guess that the Department of Public Enterprise should have identified a provision which is unconstitutional, repugnant to morality, and taken it out. Why did we get to this? So I will stand with only these two questions, Madam Chairman. Thank you very much.
I counted three, but anyway, it's okay.
Your counting might be better than mine.
lawyers should be able to count money very thoroughly. It's actually from 2000 that the 2% thing kicked in. So we're dealing with a problem of about 10 years. Yes. Mr. Mlindi?
My surname is Nana Chaperson.
No, in China. I can call I'm calling you in the Chinese way. Just ask your surname for your name.
Are we in China? No, well, I accept it, sir.
I'm a citizen of the world.
I accept it, sir. Before I get to my comments, sir, can I start by saying that whatever you are either taking or drinking these days, keep you wide awake. I'm interested to know what is it that you're drinking, sir, because for quite a while, Honorable Van Dalen was able to sneak some questions, you know. You seem to be picking him up, and then he's unable to smuggle more than three questions these days. Well, Chair, can I just say that the situation of former Transnet employees, to me, hits directly in my heart, because I know exactly what they mean. My own aunt, who's the last one in my father's family, got married to a Mr. Valelo Keu. They live in Alwal North. He has worked, this man worked for Transnet for more than 40 years. And to date, the widow is getting 350 rand a month. Only this month that she got 2,900, which I think is the bonus.
One.
So I'm saying, to me, it hits right. I know what it means. Because whenever a person passes away in that family in Alwano, we should put money together to bury that person. And yet, the husband had worked for more than 40 years for railway, born at railway then. Secondly, Chairperson, Honorable Van Dalen mentioned that why Transnet seems to push responsibility to an already overburdened social system. And I think I want to agree with him and put it to Transnet that I think it's about time that they must own up to the problem and resolve this matter once and for all. Sometime in May, June, an announcement was made by the Minister of Public Administration, Minister Baloyi, that there is a second disbursement which will be paid to former civil servants who were not part of a pension fund or something in the mid 1980s. And I made an inquiry in relation to this with the office of the Premier in the Eastern Cape. To put it short, Chairperson, the purpose of the exercise is to try and balance the scales, because in the mid 80s, general workers worked for the state, particularly black general workers, were not part of a pension fund until a certain period. And now the state is balancing the scales. It's paying back what is due to those former employees. If that employee is dead, whoever is left in the family can make an application. Now, I want to know, Chair, what is it so difficult for Transnet to approach, instead of dilly-dallying, duck and diving, giving us all these complex presentations? What is it that is so difficult with them if they truly cannot afford it? What is so difficult that they can approach the Treasury in the same way as the Department of Public Administration has done to try and sort out this matter once and for all? What is it that's so difficult? And lastly, can I check from the pensioners, and Transnet, of course, are you categorized as civil servants? Or
is that your fourth question? I'll be gracious.
Yeah, why the old Chairperson? I just want to know what category are they falling under? Thanks, sir.
You got the question? Transnet, your employees, are they public servants or how are they categorized? No, they are not public sector employees in that sense, but they will answer that question. Let me make my two observations or three and then ask two questions. Then we give a chance to... Most questions were fielded to Transnet. Yeah. You see, Parliament can actually intervene, but that will be a draconian approach. We can, again, revisit the Act and correct the situation through legislation. But we thought that engagement is the best option, where we engage all the parties. So we still reserve that right with this committee and that Parliament, but we chose to engage. So we must bear that in mind. I
personally have a quarrel. And it's a quarrel that is shared by many. We have never discussed this thing officially in this committee, but we talk about it, and Mr. Mukwena hinted on it, that the issue of the sale of the waterfront and the MTN shares, firstly, I'm grappling with what was the rationale for selling the waterfront. There is a notion of selling non-core assets. Sometimes the justification of the sale of the waterfront is put as it had to be sold because it was a non-core asset. Sometimes you get the impression that it was sold to deal with this issue of the deficit of 17 billion. Yeah, you never know which is which. And I think the issue of this sale of non-core assets is an issue that this committee must still pay attention to. The sale of the waterfront, amongst others, improved the balance sheet of Transnet. But that was the good thing about it. But I actually don't know what was the rationale. Was it to deal with the 17 billion deficit, or was it to dispose of non-core assets? You don't know. But I think it's a matter that we need to look into, including the issue of the MTN. It is done, but for the future, I think we can want to reverse that so that we check whether we got value for money and whether the purpose was fulfilled, that exercise was put in place for. I have a question that's similar to Mr. Dikobo's one. On your slides are not numbered. On that slide where you show us the assets, the liabilities, and the number of pensioners, firstly, you do not categorize the pensioners for us. You give us a round figure from 101,635 initially to 75,000 right now. When you don't know the categories, you can't really play around with the figures to check what's happening there. But what is funny for me is the fact that the slope of decrease of liability is very small. So the liabilities are decreasing very small, but the slope of decrease of the members is sharp. When you look into these two, it does not correspond with your asset value, the increase of the asset value. So I have a problem with that. Firstly, you will have to go and categorize the members, but you will have to tell me why is there no correlation between the slope of the increase of the liabilities and the slope of the decrease of members in the pension fund. My last question to you, Transnet, will be... you propose to deal with this issue. Of course, you're saying all the things that we all know, that the minister will have to agree, DPE will have to agree, okay. The fund will not have to put itself at risk. But you are not giving us a timeline, because that timeline is crucial for us to know, are you addressing this issue or are you not addressing the issue, and then decide what to do as Parliament, whether to step in. But the last question also, which is saying, we can step in terms of the law, or we can step in terms of talking to Treasury, assisting Transnet to talk to Treasury together with DPE to make revenue available to deal with this issue. But constitutionally, we have an obligation to make sure that we do not allow the situation that impoverishes people because of an act of parliament that was passed in 2000. We have an obligation. And the question that Mr. Mukwena is asking, there are pensioners all over across the parastatals, is a relevant one. However, it is only the pensioners of Transnet that had a law like that kept their pension increase at 2%. It didn't occur anywhere else. And as a result, we have a constitutional obligation as Parliament to look into this matter and make sure that justice prevails. Transnet over to you, please.
Thanks a lot, Chairperson. I will be sharing responses to the questions you've raised with my colleagues. We also will be relying also on our actuaries that are present. I think you started off, Chair, by seeking to get clarity from us whether you had heard me correctly when I said that this is a problem. And so I would re-emphasize that, yes, we consider this a real serious problem and a challenge. We've been seeking solutions on it as a company for some time, and they've included engagements with government. And some of those engagements even predate my time at Transnet. I've been about 6 years at Transnet. There have been engagements around this thing between government and Transnet long before then. So when you, for example, bring in the question around the timeline, the timeline for finding a solution, an effective solution, we can't determine it ourselves, all by ourselves. But as you've correctly pointed out, it would need other players who are higher than us. Those would include government, particularly the department or the Minister of Public Enterprises and the Minister of Finance. So those are some of the players, I think, when you look into a constructive solution to this. We certainly would not want you to get into a draconian solution, and so we would do everything to work with you to avoid any draconian solution. The point, we've indicated a number of things about what we've done as a company, and I think honorable members were able to pick up, for example, what we refer to as ex gratia. And that was ex gratia because there is no obligation on the company to have made some of the interventions. There was no legal obligation. But there's been a moral obligation which has been driving what we've been seeking to do, including at the time when we asked that there be an intervention to correct the exclusion of black former employees and black widows. So there have been a number of things that we've intervened to do, including on the ex gratia, what many of the ex gratia payments are essentially payments that have been made by the company from its resources, not from the pension fund's resources. Now, of course, clearly from what we've been seeing here, none of those interventions have placed us into a situation where we say we are all happy. But certainly things have changed and improved through the various interventions that have been made. There was a point around whether we're making a threat to remove these bonuses or extra ship. I think the last thing we'd want to make is any threat to place pensioners in a worse off position. We're simply pointing out the implications. Bearing in mind, amongst other things, the benefit of getting access to SOAP benefit, and what are the requirements, what's the criteria to allow you to do that. And so what we've been doing is to make sure in this difficult circumstances we find ourselves in, that we don't make the problem worse than it actually is. Now, I thought let me also deal with the issue around the waterfront and MTN. And I'll start off with the MTN share sale. It was considered earlier, long before the sale was actually effected by government, that it was important to dispose of that asset in order to strengthen the position of the TSDBF, particularly deal with the deficit position in the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund. Transnet at all times thought that disposal must be at maximum market value to be able to do that. As it happened, by the time those shares were sold, they brought in more than $5 billion to the fund, and it resolved it. But beyond that, it was in any event
on the part of Transnet, it's non-core to be holding some of those investments. The same thing applies to the waterfront. Transnet only held, I think, about 25%, 23% of the waterfront. The waterfront was not core to Transnet. It made a decision on its own shareholding in respect of the waterfront, that 23%. The other holders of the waterfront, being the three pension funds, made independent decisions through their respective boards of trustees as to what they considered an appropriate decision to take to bolster the financial position of those funds. And we satisfied about, as far as the waterfront is concerned, sold at that time for 7 billion rand, made a massive difference. In fact, we've noticed in the respect of the TSDBF that it got 3 billion of that amount. Transnet got far less than that, because it was only a holder of about 23% shareholding. Now, all of these decisions we took focus on the best interest of first the company on the one hand, as far as those that affected Transnet directly, and the trustees took on behalf of the board of trustees. I happened to sit on the board of trustees of one of those funds. So a lot of these steps have been taken to seek a constructive resolution of the challenges that face us. So we've always been seeking to do the right thing around this, and that will be reflected also in the answers that will be given. I think the last one, there was a suggestion that we may have lied. I can assure you that we would never take any action intended to mislead Parliament. And so clearly that the suggestion that we've lied is pretty unfortunate, and of course it's quite damaging, and if it was said outside the bounds of privilege, it's a matter that one would have to look into. But we will deal with each of those questions and have the actuaries also to address them. Thank you.
Thanks, Leo. I've noticed, Mr. Mokoena, probably want to follow up, but let me deal with these two things, critical issues, especially the one of lying. I apologize from the chair not to have protected Transnet. Being accused of lying to Parliament is a very, very, very serious accusation. And as I was listening to what, firstly, I asked, who is lying, because I wanted to follow them. But I did not follow up after asking who is lying. When I listened to the response, I actually think that, the response that followed Mr. Van Dijk's accusation of lying, the explanation, he said that when you add this and you add this as a bonus, the figure, whatever, I think that is not a lie. I want to protect Transnet to say that from the chair, to say that I wouldn't put it as lying. There should be a space for the committee and Mr. Van Dijk to differ with how you explain how you play with figures. But I don't think that is tantamount to lying. So I will apologize on behalf of the committee from the chair. But I would retain Mr. Van Dijk's query of how you add up things and what you call them. But I would only subtract the assertion of lying. But his concerns, I would retain, and I think we should resolve. And sincere apologies to Transnet for being accused of lying. Yeah, it's a discrepancy, it's not a lie. You know, as Africans, they leak as liens and that, but in the language of Parliament, when you say you're lying, that becomes grossly serious.
Imagine that
it's fugitive numbers. Sorry?
Imagine that it's fugitive
numbers. Fugitive amounts to a fraud. No. It's not even misleading. I think it's interpretation. Transnet is combining the figures and interpreting them in a different way to what Mr. Van Dijk says, and that's not a lie.
Then the rest of us.
Sorry?
In a different way than the rest
in a
of course, it's, this is the Democrats. They might be interpreting them in a different way, different to all of us, but that is not tantamount to a lie. Mr. Mukwena, you wanted to ask a follow-up question?
Yeah, my debate is one chairperson, although it has got very serious implications. The Transnet is talking about the sale of the waterfront, and it's talking about the $7 billion. There is the original figure of $2 billion. Of 250 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm quitting. Mm-hmm. That 250 million was just peanuts, just selling with the waterfront for a song, and that was done by the CEO then, Dr. Mulman. It's historical, right? The $7 billion, it's a recent one, which is linked to the Dubai Shell thing. So don't compare the two. Yeah.
My question has not been answered.
Sorry. I've noted you, sir. I'll come to you. Mr.
Van Dijk,
is there a follow-up question?
Chairperson, I'll wait for the second round because we still want replies from both parties. The question has not been answered yet.
Yeah. Is there a follow-up question?
No, just pointing out my question has not been answered. But if I can put it succinctly again.
Yeah.
If I understood it, if we do not the draconian thing but the decent thing and amend the law to say 100% of CPI effective 2002, the short effective 2006, the shortfall would be $5.7 billion. No, if not, what would it be? How would that affect you? Can you bear it? Would it go to the fiscals, and how much would it go to the fiscals?
Just jot that question down and work out the figure. And continue to answer, first answer to all the questions while somebody is looking for an answer to Mr. Ambrose.
Okay. So then proceed with your permission, Chair, on the other side.
Thank you, Chair. What I am going to try and do is go through the questions as they were asked and at the end of it if we still haven't answered. So one of the first questions was from Dr. Van Dijk around the number of pensioner elected trustees.
Can you hear the mic closer?
Sorry. Up until 2008, the rules did not provide for the for pensioner elections, and when pensioner elections were requested, and when there was communication from the pensioners, Transnet and the TSDDF worked and allowed for pensioner representatives to be appointed by the pensioners. It's correct that it is 2 out of 6. And then you did also question from the pensioners around the communication around that, but I don't think I can respond on that question. So I'm not sure if
maybe
around later. The communication, maybe later. On the bonus question as well, and the comments made at the bottom of that slide of 70% of inflation, saying that the bonuses, the ad hoc bonuses, resulted in improvements of 70% of inflation since 2007, and the weighted average increase in pensions was... the 13.4% is limited to the last 3 years. But what I would like to do on that question is ask one of the actuaries to respond, as they calculated these and have reported on these in order for independence.
Thank you. In terms of the understanding of the 13.4%, in terms of the calculation, what I understand is it's a 2% per annum plus the ex gratia that was paid in by Transnet in respect of the widows, etc., as well as the effect of the bonuses, you know, over that 3 year period.
The effect.
Yeah, the effect of that.
There was a question asking for clarity on the ex gratia payment. I think that was around whether or not that impacts on SOAP. That ex gratia payment is, we differentiate, the ex gratia payments are made from Transnet, whereas the ad hoc bonuses are made from the TSDDF, and therefore the ex gratia payments, which are not an obligation of Transnet, nor can there be any right to the pensioners, wouldn't impact on SOAP. You asked the CPI, there was a question around the CPI-linked calculation. But I'm not sure what that, what the...
Spreadsheet, we don't have the spreadsheet.
Oh, we don't have the spreadsheet, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the termination of the fund, the fund will end when all beneficiaries are, if they're principal members, deceased, or when the spouses are deceased, or when the children reach the age where they're no longer entitled to benefits. That does link, although we will prepare, Honourable Chairperson, the schedule as requested by yourself with greater detail, but that does to explain to a great degree why the numbers that you referred to are reducing quite significantly, but the liability is not, because those are the principal members reflected in the numbers, and it doesn't reflect then their dependents, being the spouses or the children that subsequently become entitled to benefits. So I think we will create a far more detailed spreadsheet. There were a number of questions around whether the portfolio committee has the right to alter the rules, or the providers you need to transmit. That's not for our response. As mentioned, there was a question as well around the fact that although the numbers are declining...
No, we don't have the right to change the rules, but we have the right to change the act.
The act, yes. Sorry. There was a further question around why, if the numbers are declining so rapidly, why what's available for distribution to the pensioners is not increasing. But as I explained earlier, that's because the number of principal members are declining, but are then replaced by spouses and children. So it's not quite so directly linked, and we'll address that in the additional information that we do send through. There was a question around whether or not the bonuses can be paid even if the fund is in deficit. In other words, even if a CPI-linked increase, my understanding of the question was that even if a CPI-linked increase rule is implemented, if a CPI-linked increase is not available, could one not nonetheless pay the ad hoc bonuses, seeing as that's what we're doing now anyway? And I think on that one I'd again like the actuaries to advise, because the consequence of the fund going into an actuarial deficit, there are knock-on consequences to the cash flow of the fund that's available to the members. Anton?
Thank you. In terms of the assessment of the bonuses that we did since 2007, prior to that the fund was in deficit. If the fund was in deficit, there wasn't additional or excess money to spend in terms of extra bonuses. From 2007, 8, 9, and 10, the fund did have excess monies or funding level in excess of 100%, which enabled the trustees to make decision to pay additional bonuses. In the event that the fund is in deficit, i.e. less than 100% funded, the trustees won't have the luxury to grant any bonuses to members, because that will threaten the future solvency of the fund. But whilst the funding level is 100% or above, the trustees will have the discretion to allow these extra bonuses or to determine these extra bonuses.
Thank you. Anton, can I also ask you to address the question which was...
Just a moment. Please. Can you please note your...
Okay.
Questions
that
I'll
give it was you. About the bonus in matter.
You want to ask it now?
Madam Chair, we mustn't get this wrong. The pensioners really appreciate what is done for them with the bonuses. However, what was lost sight of is the bonus that they were being paid over the last 3 years has been calculated on pensions that are drastically reduced. Over the previous 8 years, since the 2% rule came in, the salaries could have been substantially higher had we had applied inflation. Inflation in most of those years was running around 10%, whereas they got 2. So the last 3 years, the percentage against inflation is great, but the actual amount was based on a substantially lower pension as a result of the 2% stipulation in the previous years.
They are agreeing with you. They are nodding their heads in agreement with your observation. Thank you. Please switch off your mic and please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could also ask the actuaries to comment on the questions regarding if the rules were to be changed to an increase, what would be the shortfall? Would it, and what would be the impact of backdating to 2006? If you can just comment on those.
Yeah. Thank you. In terms of the presentation that we've done, into a full inflation going forward based on the current pensions, i.e. not backdating that, the cost is estimated at just over 3 billion rand That is due to the lower inflation, etc. In 2010, it was 5.7 billion as of 2009, but you know the fund did have returns to support it and lower inflation. However, in terms of, and if you look at the table presented by the pensioners, in terms of the 2,500 to the 4,800 odd number that was presented, what would happen if we backdate the increases just on a going forward basis? What would happen is, in essence, I calculated the percentage, I think it's 86 odd percent. What will happen is the liability figure will go up by 86%, which is not in terms of the latest valuation numbers. So to increase all the pensions by 87% will add at least another 13, 14 billion to the already 3 billion deficit. So going forward, if we catch up inflation, going back, you know, at this point in time, 3 billion from now going forward, I take the other point to say, or the argument from the pensioners to say the current pensions are perhaps not kept up with inflation, 86% to that will add 13, 14 billion. So going forward, another 16 billion. If you include backdated payments from, you know, back to 2006, even back to 2000, I have done a quick calculation with, in my view, around 3, 4, 5 billion rand in terms of that setup, if you do it backdated as well, as if it happens in 2006.
So what's the total figure?
Close to 20 billion rand.
Okay. Should we implement now?
The point being, my question was, can your balance sheet take it, and how much of that would it be passed on to the fiscus?
My balance sheet. But that's why finance, public enterprises, you need to start with that figure. You need to appreciate how much it will be, because then you use that figure to determine at what point do you want to start, how far back do you want to go, and all kind of things. But 20 billion now, the balance sheet of Transnet would not be able to take. And in fact, this is the fault of the state generally, including Transnet. I don't want to exonerate you. So that's why we say that this problem, the Minister of Public Enterprise, the Minister of Finance, Parliament, and Transnet, and all of us, we should put our heads together and see how can we get out of this. Yes, sir?
Chairperson, just to follow up on this, or for more clarity, Chairperson, with all due respect, really, to say that it will cost between 3 to 4 to 5 billion, I mean, for it actually to tell this to Parliament, do you know how much money we're talking about? We must be more accurate, because 1 billion is 1,000 million rand. Now, you know, to play here with between 2 billion rand, and to say this is, will cost more or less that, it's not acceptable. We should get more closer to the figures. They know that they come to Parliament today to come and give us some information, to come and say the cost might be between 3 to 5 billion. This document of Metropolitan, the actuaries who runs the fund of the Transnet Pension Fund, they made a calculation that it will cost, if you go to 100% of CPI, to 4.4 billion. That was November last year. So this is the type of figures that we wanted from Transnet, not speculations it might be this and this and this, like Mr. Nana said, or some of my other colleagues. You know, we can't carry on with information and, speculations. We want this problem to be solved. So I just want to bring this question of what it will cost to your attention. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, no, I'll take Kasa just now and give them the right of reply. Just before I give you Wheel.
Transnet did not answer the question that I asked, which you also buttressed, that the money from the sale of the waterfront, where did that accrue to? Did it just go to the general balance sheet of Transnet, or to what extent did it go to defray this deficit of the pension fund, which originally we told was used to justify the exercise of the sale?
No, sorry.
They have not completed answering the questions. They would still come to that. But in terms of is this figure accurate or not, I just want to say that, you know, I chair the pension fund of politicians, from deputy president, all of you. And often, it's even if you are an actuary scientist, I can't just say right now to you, give me a calculation. I have to say, go and work the figures for me. Treasury, I gave them a task right now, because the last, just as an example, the Musaneke Commission said that traditional leaders should be part of the pension fund. And then we said we gave the figures to Treasury, and they've got the best actual scientists, or whatever you call them, to say, these are the numbers of current traditional leaders. How much is it going to cost to put them to the public representative pension fund? It's 6 months down the line. They have not given us an accurate figure. So I'm just saying that we will want that figure from you. We want it as accurate as possible. We know that from now you are, yes, but you must go and do a thorough job.
Madam Chair, if I can just tell you that these people really knew they were coming to Parliament and these questions were coming up, so with all due respect, they should have had the answers, not to come back again.
Allow me to correct them. Firstly, we must not call them these people. I will give them the chance to go and do accurate calculations and come back to us with the accurate calculations. The fact of the matter right now is that they do not know the actual figure. We will grant them chance to do so. I foresee, I'm not closing the meeting now, but I foresee that we are going to engage this one another on this once again. By the time when you come back next to Parliament, or within 10 working days, please send us a well-calculated and a very accurate figure, so that we know on the basis of what should we make plans going forward. You are still answering questions.
Thank you very much. There was included in the question when we were talking about what would be the shortfall and the backdating, there was a question about the liability being borne by Transnet or the state, but I think that's not something we can just give an answer to here, and it has been acknowledged that further that needs to be looked at. Yeah. There was a question made around Transnet approaching the National Treasury. Why is it so difficult? And I know that Mr. Costa did respond to that in his overall introduction. The question around the categorization of the pensioners was noted, and that information will be addressed. The decrease of the members being large, but the liability is not, we noted that. It will be addressed in the information to be provided. The timeline for proposals, very similarly. The question around the proceeds from the V&A waterfront, the disposal which resulted in the seven billion rand proceeds, 3 billion rand in cash was paid over more than 3 billion, was paid into the bank account of the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund.
And the other fund, their share.
But the 3 billion rand in excess of 3 billion that the PSDBF was entitled to as a result of their 44% shareholding in the investment went into their balance sheet.
You're talking
into
the
their bank
account. Not the first.
Not the first. I'm not aware of the 250 million, so I'm only commenting on the second sale.
Okay.
Or the sale.
You're talking about the Dubai
thing.
Yeah.
That's so painful.
Next year.
Are you done, Francis? Okay. Is there any
outstanding question? Yes. My question was talking about affordability. I asked a question, what would be the most acceptable funding level? Because from where I stand, as somebody who doesn't work with figures, if somebody tells me it is funded at 116.5%, I can only conclude the fund is not doing badly. Because effectively, my understanding is that if everybody were to claim now, we could pay 100% and still be left with 16%. Now, something tells me this fund has, it has improved. I mean,
it's not doing bad.
No, no, not at all. It's actually doing very well. Because other pension funds, at 95%, they say, well, we know there will never be all the claims at the same time. It's doing well. So that's what I want to understand. In their view, what would be the acceptable? What is their target? Maybe they want 200%. I don't know.
Members, you're confusing me. That question was outstanding from the first list.
Yes, another one that's
yes. I'll just note your names now and then let them answer the outstanding question and then flow with your next second round of questions. So
the pension has not responded.
Well, the pension has not got to point.
Yeah.
Chairperson.
They may comment, but remember, none of you post questions to them. Okay. Sorry. My apologies. You have one more question to respond to, and then the pensioners will respond.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. I think I'd like to ask again the actuaries to explain from their perspective what would be the ideal funding level for a fund.
No manga, manga.
No, for a person that's not good with numbers, you guessed right. 100% is where we feel comfortable. You know, 116% means the fund's doing well.
Yeah.
You know, I would certify funds financially sound 100%, i.e. meaning there's 1 rand of assets to meet 1 rand of liability.
Yeah. Are you happy with that, Kumo?
Yeah, good.
Except that does not translate into...
It doesn't explain where we are. A fund with 116% can do what our pensioners are asking for. That's what I'm trying to understand. Why can't you do it?
I think... May I respond? I think in terms of our presentation, and as I said, I mean, the numbers, you know, as the number of members change and as various assumptions change, what is inflation, what are interest rates? But we did note in the presentation that we did that based on the position of the fund at that level of funding, targeting 50% of CPR was affordable would pretty much mean that the actuaries would then evaluate the fund and say it's 100% funded, exactly what you're asking. However, the consequence of targeting 50% of CPI at the moment, and we're only talking about targeting it going forward, so we're not addressing the other question that was raised about backdating. So I do make that very, very clear that changing the rule today prospectively, I'm only talking prospective, but targeting 50% today and moving that going forward, based on the assumptions, the fund would be 100% funded, the actuaries would be happy, but they would... probably over the next 10 years, if the bonuses that have been paid for the last 4 years continue to be paid, pensioners would receive less over the next 10 years in a 50% CPR linked rather than the current dispensation plus bonuses. And the reason I'm saying 50% is because 50% is the level at which the fund remains in its current financial position.
You're beginning to confuse me. I don't know if I'm the only one that can confuse you. Yeah. You
are saying? Yeah, no, sorry. You see, there is an issue that we... it's very difficult to analyze these things in committee, but there is an issue of compounding. I mean, the inflation increases compounded. Each one sets a new basis. Bonuses, not. Those like me who run companies give bonuses to employees when we don't have money. When we have money, we give them... a salary increase, because the salary increase creates a new base for the new bonus. So it is true that 50% in terms of immediate cash flow would be less than a bonus, but it's not carried over the year. But if you allow me, Madam Chairman, just a one-minute comment, because I'm not feeling well about all this. I mean, there are situations in Parliament when we talk about money, situations when we don't talk about money. You know how harsh I get when there is talk about money, but now, for crying aloud, we found money to build 10 stadiums that we don't need to give an enormous show. Money can always be found, but when it comes to these people who have served for 40 years, they are in unattainable conditions. I don't think we should be talking about money. I think we need to do the principal things, and if they need to suffer, they suffer. If they can take the pain, they can take the pain. If they can't take the pain, they go to Pravin Gordhan.
and making take the pain. We as a committee in a situation like this should act on a matter of principle without being afraid or concerned about who is going eventually to bear the pain, because surely the pensioners shouldn't.
Somebody is sabotaging me. Normally I'm able to cut off people from my rights while they are going over. I, committee members have found a way of dealing with me. No, you know, I agree with Mr. Ambrosini's last remarks. I also get very sick all the time if it's money that we consider when we are supposed to do justice and all those things. So, but I think those are the things that we will look into when we try and conclude today's meeting. However, I want to underscore the point that arises from the observation that's made by Mr. Dikobo and your response. That if we, the performance of the fund currently is such that moving forward, we can effect the change.
Okay.
No, I didn't qualify the change. So I don't know why are you behaving typically like an actuary person who doesn't want to add one more zero or one more.
And I know nothing about that.
So, but I think going forward, if we don't backdate and the position of the fund such now, right now, it's quite healthy. We can do an intervention. The question is how big the intervention. So I want us to underscore that and then to give the pensioners a chance to respond.
Madam Chair, yes, thank you. One of the questions that was asked was what happened with the trustees before and what happens now? In the past, the trustees of the Transnet Pension Fund was 50% from the unions and 50% from management. When the fund was split, the act that was compiled by, must be management, only brought in two pensioner members and four from the company. However, The stipulation at that time was that those two pensioners were also appointed by the company. So the pensioners themselves had no say on who the delegation was until recently when we complained bitterly and eventually we got heard. And then election took place and a democratic process followed. So we have two out of the six. It was asked, and, you know, why is it 2%? Has it just happened now? Madam Chair, this has happened for a long time. We have had meetings with various ministers. We've had meetings with the management on many occasions. At one time, the pension fund used to have an annual meeting with the pensioners. And at every one of those annual meetings, the 2% matter was addressed. And it was said, well, that's all the fund could afford. But so it's something that's been an ongoing thing for quite a long time. There was a question that was quite interesting. Why are the Black Widows not here today? Mm. And we wanted to bring the Black Widows here, but unfortunately we were told that they could, if they came, they came under their own costs and they couldn't afford the costs. So that's why they're not here.
You guys come with your own costs.
You'd be paid our own. We paid our own costs to be here, and it's worth every penny to hear what goes on today.
I think next time, just switch off. Committee members will allow me on your behalf. I think next time when we have this meeting, we need a representation of Black Widows, and Transnet must bear the cost. I don't know how they will elect amongst themselves. That's a challenge.
We want a
representation, one or two people,
but
not like a mass meeting.
There are many Black pensioner clubs that we could ask them for with a delegate.
Yeah, but we don't want to break Transnet's back. If you can fund at least two people to represent them to come here. Transnet, your response, please.
We'll cope.
You cope.
With so many people not coping in court, now what I meant would cooperate with that. I think the point we've been emphasizing that we are not seeking to stop the voices heard. But the most important thing is beyond the voices is try to find a solution, and I think you're prepared to assist us to bring in all of the parties in finding a solution that is effective.
I thought Mr. Kashla wanted to say that they will foot part of our legal future.
The company would run broke.
Were you done, sir? Because members still have one question each or so. I think you are done.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, just an observation before I come to the question. And coming back to the fact that we must just get a very clear understanding, it's about a 2% per annum increase in pensions. This is what is on the table today. What is the reality at present? And we cannot say in this presentation that the increase in pensions over 2008, 2009, 2010 has been in fact been 13.4%. It is not correct. And thank you very much for saying that this is misleading. Chairperson, to come back to the concerns of one of my colleagues, it is misleading the committee, those figures. Chairperson, coming back to the funding level, the funding level is healthy, but the main reason for that...
Mr. Funding, let's say that figure is not...
apples with apples, then, if you...
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Chairperson, the reason for the healthy funding level, I think it is because it is based on a 2%. Per annum increase. If it is based on the 100% of CPI, of course your funding level will be in a huge backlog at the shortage. So this is the reason. It is not good performance per se, but it is because the funding level is based on only 2% increase. What the cost will be if you get only a 2%. But if we change it, or if there's a change to a higher percentage of inflation, of course then the funding level will be in a bad shape. Chairperson, now my question is this. I don't think the purpose of this meeting is to put blame on anyone today. Like you correctly said, Chairperson, South Africa inherited a problem in 1990 when the SA Transport Service became Transnet with a shortfall of 17 billion, which is never properly addressed over this past 20 years. And we are sitting now with the problem that we got these people. And I want to know from Transnet and from the pensioners whether I'm correct to say that their net income, after their gross income, deducting their contributions to their medical accounts, deducting their contributions to their municipal accounts and electricity, their net income is even lower now than it was in 2000. So these people get poorer and poorer every year. The 2% can't compensate because the increase in the medical contribution, the inflation to medical contributions is so huge, and you know the prices for electricity and water, so they become actually poorer.
That is a given.
And I want a confirmation from the people if that is so. I do believe that is a given. I agree. Taking into account, and Transnet must come and help me there, that over and above this huge problem that we inherit 17 billion, which has never been addressed, that actually you can say Transnet owe that to the fund. Taking that into account, these people, the pensioners now, only receive, and am I correct, a 213 rand per month medical contribution assistance. I mean, what is 213 rand? You can buy a bottle of medicine.
Sorry, I want to ask you a question based on your question. Is it? I don't think it's structured that owes the fund 17 billion. It is the state.
Yes, you're absolutely correct that according to legislation, Transnet guarantees the obligations and then state guarantees Transnet obligations. So if we talk then Transnet or state, like Dr. Ambrosini said, it's 100%. So what I would like to say is this is not about blaming anyone, and I want to plea on this committee, Chairperson, that this is a human issue. Like you correctly said, we've got the responsibility to get the disparities of the past, to get it in line. And we can't wait, Chairperson, because if you look at the presentation, there are 75,000 members left. Only in 10 years, they decreased from 101,000 to 75,000. We haven't got time, Chairperson. These are elderly people, and we can't wait ad infinitum. It already came a long way, and I'm very glad that you say that this must come to a resolution, and we must resolve the problem as soon as we can. Thank you, Chair.
Any other comments?
Yes, Madam Chair, on my question of how long, is it envisaged that the board will change in the future more members from pensioners or less members of pensioners? That was never answered. And then on this table that you have here, which I saw, is that the membership in 2000 and and 3 and 2004 it actually picked up. How is that possible for a fund that is closed? Why did more members come in 2003 and 2004? It doesn't look right.
Okay. Any other comments? I'll go down there. Mrs. Bowman, your hand was raised earlier on.
No, I think I will rest my case because it's to do with the, you know, what it's going to cost us related to, you know, the difference, disparity in the figures that we picked up between what the Transnet and the pensioners are bringing to the table.
So that figure, how long will it take you to give it to us? How much it will take us? Different scenarios
It would take approximately a week.
Okay.
Honourable Chair, I think what we would need to do though is be very clear about what assumptions or exactly what scenarios we're looking at, because I think that's some of the challenge today. We haven't brought all the scenarios available.
Now give us the possible scenarios and cost them. Okay. Mr. Mkwena,
it's a whole line also going there. Yes, Chairperson, it might just be a minuscule figure. But for in terms of corporate governance, just want to know, the trustees, are they drawing any remuneration and what is the quantum?
Yes, no, this question will be answered. Noted. Next question.
No, thank you, Chair. Based on the input by our research, and I've listened very carefully, I've not heard Transnet disputing. That, of course, there is a deficit of 17.1 billion inherited, but there is a rollout plan to deal with that. Transnet to pay 10 billion April 1990. Trans to promise to increase contribution from 10 to 12%, 15 further to 15.5, and the rest of the deficit will be paid over. What happened to Transnet? Why was this obligation not fulfilled?
Mr.
Yes, Madam Chairman. According to my researchers, if the committee wants to fix this problem, there's two ways of dealing with it. One is to pass a law amending Section 24 of the Rule 24 of the Schedule to the Act, and where it says 2%, it changes to 100% of CPI. And then there is another way, because strangely enough, the schedule of the act, which is law, in terms of the act, can be amended by the trustees with the consent of Transnet, which I think is unconstitutional in terms of the pharmaceutical case, because but being as it may, taking it at face value, the other way that this committee would have is to request, tell basically the Minister of Public Enterprises, the only shareholder, to tell Transnet to consent and approve the amendment of that rule to read 100% of CPI. So this it seems to me that these are the two options that we have to get what we want, what we think the committee wants, and to fix the problem, not in a draconian manner, but in a decent manner. Is there a preference between the two options, or is there a third option for us to bring about justice?
Noted. Mr. Nana?
thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, to the pensioners, can I start by saying South Africa is a highly charged country when it comes to race relations. And secondly, I want to raise my concern about the representativity of the pensioners in the fund. I had initially asked who was representing pensioners present. I thought Mr. Krobler is representing the pensioners. I do not know the second representative.
Okay.
It's yourself. Precisely. Now what I want to raise as a concern and probably caution the pensioners. I know it's not for me as a member of parliament to tell you what to do
and what not to do. But given the nature of our racial composition in the country, as pensioners, don't you think that it would be prudent on your side, or rather on your part, to firstly investigate and explore prospects of having one pension club instead of Shelf and this and this and Black Widows and Black Clubs? Clearly to me, from where I'm sitting, it has got serious racial connotations and divides. Is it not prudent on your part that you should, I'm not saying you should do it tomorrow, but going forward, don't you think it would be prudent on your part as pensioners to explore prospects of coming up with one club? That will not only help in enhancing your image, but it would rather help in downplaying what could be in some of others' minds. I mean, I can tell you here and now, as you see, I'm black. I know my kids prefer to call themselves brown. As you can see, I'm black, and it does from time to time strike my mind that why, for instance, in the board of in the trustees of the fund, I don't know who's the second one, but I would be quite amazed if the second, it's the two of you, both people that are representing pensioners in the fund are both white, and to me it's an issue, and both white and male, and to me it's an issue. So I'm saying it's not a matter that we can discuss here today. We could probably talk about it at length at a later stage, but I'm just saying, don't you guys think that it's prudent on your part to consider such a proposal? Thanks, sir.
Now, we'll give you a chance to respond to all this. Let me make my last comments, and then the pensioners and yeah. As I said, I think we'll need another meeting, but solutions are already beginning to come forward. Mr. Ambrosini has posed two possibilities and asked, is there a middle ground or is there a third option? I think we must go and look for all options. There is the option of Parliament changing the Rule 24. I don't know if the legality of that, because the rules of pension fund are supposed to be changed by, but it is a schedule. Yes. Yeah. So there is a possibility there by augmenting that figure that Mr. But we didn't want to do this until we engage one another and we bring forward other possibilities. I think that would be the last resort. Parliament will be left with no option if we don't find solutions and don't find them fast enough to kick in. That I've noted. I'll come back to you, Mr. Ambrosini. The other thing that is bothering us is this issue of 2:4. We implore you to go and look into it. The issue of 2:4, and also the issue of power of Transnet management over the board. If it's still the case like it, that would be a worrying issue in terms of governance that needs to be rectified. The issue that Mr. Nana is raising, Mr. Van Dijk will tell you that when he brought this thing up for the first time, our concerns were the first one was, what about former black employees of Spornet? So we need to make good, not only in terms of the fund, but also in terms of the composition. So that is another homework that we are giving both Transnet and the various bodies that came here today. Respond to the questions, and we are going to close this meeting by saying, what is the next step? The last round of question of members, then we spend 5 minutes developing the next step. Treasury, I hope that you have taken your notes. DPE, I hope you have taken your notes. We implore both of you to go and respond.
report to your principals. If you run short of information, contact the office of the chairperson. We will furnish the records of the meeting so that you extract whatever responsibilities might be coming your way from this meeting, and we want to hear from you. So maybe when we plot the next step, we'll have to feature you in the next step as well. Would you kindly respond to the last round of questions? We'll start with pension at this time and end with Transnet.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Regarding the pensioner clubs of other colour, there are plenty of them. And we have an alternate on the board is one from the Black Pensioner Clubs, and he sits in the board meetings. In my particular organisation, I have about 30,000 Transnet pensioners as members, and in there are Black clubs as well. They even use my newsletters as their club newsletters. So it's not because we're sitting here as a white person that we're only representing whites. We're representing all colours. And lots of ladies.
They use your newsletter.
They use my new. I've got a magazine that I send out every quarter, and they use it as the club magazine.
So you have a white magazine that blacks use.
It's not a white magazine, Madam Chair. It's a magazine. It's a pensioner magazine. We regard pensioners only.
No. We're going to give this responsibility to Transnet. We don't want to debate it yet. Transnet, we want that matter corrected. If there is nothing wrong there, you must demonstrate to us there is nothing wrong in terms of separation of the clubs, the relationships, and all those things. Investigate for us if you are happy, and if there are things that are not happy that were alluded to by Mr. Nana. Tell us there is nothing wrong and why there is nothing wrong. If there is anything wrong, tell us when and how you think those should be corrected. You may proceed, sir.
Madam Chair, the other question was, do we get paid as trustees? We do get paid as trustees.
Quantum.
It's an amount that was decided on in relation to, I believe the pension fund can answer the how they determine the amount, but I think it's 4,000 rand a day for attending meetings.
How many meetings a month? 4,000 a day for attending a meeting. How many meetings a month?
Four meetings a year.
Four meetings a year.
One meeting per quarter, that's the usual.
Can I just comment, Chairperson, that for a board with members getting a maximum of 2,800 and then board members get 4,000 a day, that's scandalous.
No, you know what? No, let's hang on here. You see, they have their rules. So I don't think that we can actually, you are making moral judgments here. But bear in mind that every pension has got its rules, that is giving power to its board and all those things. So I don't want us actually to make comments that are I sit in one board, your pension fund.
I think it's very important.
And I can tell you now how much I get.
Madam Chair,
going to increase it tenfold.
Madam Chair, I think it's important to qualify. They earn 4,000 rand a meeting, four meetings a year. That means 1,000 rand a month for all their trouble. That's the most they can earn. Just to put it in perspective, it's very little. If you know that you have to prepare for meetings and you have to drive there, get there. So I really don't think that is too much. I think it's in perspective, it's very little. But this is not the issue.
That's not the issue. I think we don't invite people here to come and attack them. Mm-hmm. So I thought we would end up by saying, are you remunerated and what's the quantum and end up there. So our forgiveness. Well, you have a right as a board to determine how much you should be paid, and you know your limits and your parameters, and we know that you are operating within those parameters. Thanks. Transnet?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I'll start off with the issue of the remuneration. That remuneration is not made by the fund. It is actually made by Transnet. It's one of the contributions by Transnet for the contribution made by the trustees, and it's made only to the pensioner trustees. So that's the amount that's paid to them, not from their fund, but just from Transnet. The issue of clubs for us dealing with the issue of the constitution of clubs, I think one thing that maybe would need to appreciate there is that all of these clubs are outside of the company. They are voluntary associations. We're not involved in setting them up. I think what is important for us is just to make sure that all of the affected voices are properly heard, and when there's got to be a representation, as you've asked, that we also hear the representation also of black pensioners. And to the extent that we must facilitate their transport and accommodation to come to these meetings, that we will make sure that's attended to, Chairperson. Maybe just the other point around was still on the on blackness and whiteness. There are other blacks also from the Transnet side who are on that pension fund. That pension fund is in fact chaired by a black woman, the TSDBF. I think there was the issue raised about what would be the appropriate solution. I think what you've advised us, Chair, which I think is the appropriate one in response of Mr. Ambrosini's comment, that let's look at all of the everything, put everything into the pot, let's assess its implications, because we've already seen, and I think that was the response to Honorable Jikubo, that depending on what you give at a certain level, you're fine. But of course, as also indicated by Mr. Van Dijk, if you move beyond that, there's a problem. Let's look into how all of those issues get to be attended to. Something else?
We've been asked to look into the rates, so I think we want to comment on it.
I think there's the question that was other question related to the promises of 1990. What happened to those? And frankly, I don't have an answer to. We could look into what happened to. That's the point I think that came out from the researcher's report about the arrangements of 1990 to do with them, to do that. That Transnet would pay the 10.3 billion. I don't know whether anyone from PS, you have something on that.
No, but we also found it in the archives of Parliament.
Yes. I think we could look into that, but I think the solutions we're looking for here, we want to go beyond and really deal with everything altogether.
Thanks. Look, firstly, I want to propose that by the end of this year, we should have disposed of this matter. We are going to enter a cycle of medium-term budget framework. Maybe we should even aim to deal with this issue, to conclude it before then. So I would make proposals from the chair. Before I made them, I had cut Mr. Ambrosini out. Mr. Ambrosini, is there anything you wanted to say?
Well, you cut me off, and now you said what I wanted to say, Madam
Chair. I can read your mind.
No, I think you opened this meeting with strength, and you are trying to close it with equal strength. One thing that I don't think you want, and none of us wants, because the people are sitting there, they're sitting there now. We will be sitting there if we get lucky enough to be their age. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be one of those, and I sure not, neither do you, who will be in a long string of people who make promises. It's action, and I'm really delighted that you would have made this commitment of providing a redress to their plight by the end of the year. And I hope we can live up to that commitment, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Treasury, DPE, we want you to report to the principal and to receive proposals from you guys in the next 21 days. Same applies to Transnet in the next 21 days. In the next 21 days, I will plot another meeting in consultation with the committee. If there are any other proposals from us as the committee also within the next 21 days, which means that we are envisaging 4 weeks down the line to meet again, and hopefully that will be the last meeting, in which Treasury is going to participate. We will not accept the apology at that point that they are not going to participate. DPE will have to participate actively also, and Transnet will also bring forward solutions. If we fail at that point, we will kick in Mr. Ambrosini's solution from his researcher of amending Rule 24, the schedule. We hope we won't go that way. But let's say in the next 4 weeks, in 21 days we'll have received proposal. The fourth week down the line, we plot a meeting in which we finalize this matter. This brings us to the end of the meeting. Committee members, I want to go and insert four issues that Tisang left out on the draft program. One relates to succession planning, leadership succession planning in SOE. You know, if you listen to private companies, they will tell you that this CEO, so-and-so, will succeed this CEO in the next 18 months. We are not saying they must cheat the system, they must take shortcuts, but we need that kind of stability. The other issue that Disang has skipped out of the draft program is the issue of articles of association, regulations and acts that put these SOEs into place. If we must participate meaningfully in the review commission of the president, our starting point should be understanding. If you deal with the board, for instance, of Transnet or of ESCOM for that matter, you want to know what puts it in place, what regulations, what act, apart from the Company Act, what other regulatory legal framework allows the management of ESCOM and puts ESCOM into existence and allows ESCOM to fulfill its mandate, so that when they are not fulfilling their mandate, you fall back on that. So that's one thing that he has left. So there are four things. I cannot remember other ones. But for now, do you agree that the next meeting we should deal with the item on the agenda? The other thing that I want to remove out of the agenda that I'm discussing with DPE is the issue of denial. We are discussing it. We have not finalized it. So for now, we extract it from the draft program until my discussions with DPE are completed, if you allow me to. Mr.
Kandek. Chairperson, so are we going to approve, is that the intention to approve the draft program at the next meeting?
Yes. But I want us to know what are we doing the next meeting in terms of the program. So that we agree, just for the next meeting.
But in theory, you're going to invite some of us as well.
That's your own call.
Well, for sure, we come on our own call.
Members, I want to solicit an agreement. The next meeting we are invited by the Committee of Energy, dealing with Integrated Resource Plan 2. I have accepted that invitation on your behalf because we had an interest. So at the end of that meeting, we will spend 10 minutes together to adopt the program. Thank you very much.
What is the date of that meeting? Tuesday or Wednesday?
Tuesday.
Next Tuesday now again.
Yes.
So the one of the
thank you. Out. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Calendar.
We will finalize the matter at the end of the calendar year, not the fiscal year. The issue of I'm going to go to the next one.
We die for the day when there is one class.